Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, the studio's on, the lights are on, the screen is on. It's, you know, everything kind of flashes here. This is really kind of cool. For those of you who have never done a Blog Talk Radio show, which I imagine is almost everybody, it's kind of cool because normally in a radio show, when I started in radio 5 years ago, I've done some before that on a really short-term basis. But my first real full-time job in radio was 5 years ago. And we had a producer, and the producer had a board with dials and levers and little level things to move up and down and gauges and all kinds of stuff. And what Blog Talk Radio has done is basically duplicated that in a computer screen. And so it's really kind of cool. So we get to be our own producers and directors. And what I found as the show grew, I couldn't do it myself anymore. There's just too much going on. There's too many calls coming in. There's too many things to look up. There's too many crazy things happening. And there's a lot behind the scenes that it takes to get this going. But pretty much we've got a decent, you know, amount of technical help. And even then, every once in a while, something goes horribly wrong, which we pray doesn't happen. But, you know, lightning stuff, me pushing the wrong button, who knows? Anyway, it's a fascinating proposition for this all to get going. So I want to bring Gene in the conversation early because this is where we've got an hour before Ellen Dawson joins us from Belize. So our Skype line's working. You can call us from anywhere in the world. Feel free. That in live chat is the other thing that Gene runs. To see if anybody wants to type in a message. Usually the nasty stuff comes in on live chat and the friendly stuff comes in phone calls. It's kind of funny how that works, but that's where we seem to be going. So more of you, if you want to live chat, just get yourself a free account. It's right there on our broadcast page. And if you're listening to a podcast, as still most of you do, which is fine, it's great, but I'd much rather have you live. So if you get the chance to get a live show, type in a message. Even if it's only, hey, we're in, for, you know, give us a shout out from wherever you are. I looked at the board this morning, and Gene, are you ready for this? Azerbaijan popped up on the listener map, on the worldwide map. I didn't even know where they were. I mean, I've heard of the country before, but this is so Azerbaijan. Welcome to Action Radio. We're really glad to have you. And if you want to call us on our Skype line, which is right there on your broadcast page. And it's like the 1, 2, 3, 4. It's the fifth line down. Live colon period CID period FDD BAC 53A 2909 DE1. I'm not sure what all that means, but that's it. Hey, Gene, what do you think? We're reaching out. We've got Azerbaijan. I'm excited.
Yeah, that's wonderful. No, I have no idea where that is. Where is that?
Oh, it's it's sort of Russia, Pakistan. It's kind of tucked away. Turkey. I'd have to look at. I can't look at my map here because I get off my studio screen, and that I don't even want to risk that.
That's
actually, if you have a chance to pull up, beg your pardon?
That's pretty neat where it's at, you know.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah, it's definitely one of those. It's like Ukraine, Georgia. It's a former Soviet Union country that got its freedom. So actually, if you have a chance to look it up, that's a really good point. We should tell people exactly where it is. I don't want to speculate here. But yeah, if you get a chance to grab a world map, Azerbaijan, A-Z-E-R-B-A-I-J-A-N. Yeah, so that's one of the many things going on. This week has been very demanding, very special. It's been kind of like one of these all-encompassing weeks. And so I've been, you know, playing catch-up ever since Tuesday, because so much went into Tuesday night. We had the rally. I met some amazing people who are going to have me on their shows. And so we're going to be spreading out. Action Radio is poised for some major, and I do mean major growth, and certainly over the next year. And I think by the midterms, you know, we might actually be able to start affecting the national debate in a large way by next year. That's my hope. I wish we could have done it in 2018, because I think we could have had a huge impact on that one. And maybe, well, I don't know. You know, help contributed to the Democrats not getting the House, or at least if they did, you know, inspiring people to start doing the audits then, because I figured they cheated then. You know, the 2020 was the last great effort before everybody caught on. But they were cheating long before that. And I think 2018, there was no reason for any of the impeachments. There was no reason for the Democrats to take over the House because they had fraudulent elections out in California that went Republican. That they switched to Democrat, and the geldings, of course, let them because they always do. And it was a crazy situation. But anyway, back to this week, the rally. Just the amount of information and context, it's really something to be in a rally, because you're surrounded by fellow activists, and you think you sort of have this thought, like, you know, these incredible people, you know, what am I doing here? It's sort of like, everybody else was like a doctor, a lawyer. They had like 15 PhDs behind their name. They had this, you know, I have a couple of bachelors, right? You know, so here I am sitting in the company of these just amazing people. And, but then I thought about, you know, no one else has come up with Action Radio. So that's what makes, you know, this whole endeavor special, is that we're the only ones doing what we do. There are doctors, there are lawyers, there are specialists, there are degrees, but nobody can get a degree in Action Radio yet. No one can get a degree in citizen legislation. Yeah.
The thing is, it doesn't matter what we do if people don't share the show, if people don't get involved, because then it's not going to go anywhere, and we're not going to be able to make the influence we can make throughout the government as far as getting appropriate bills sent to the, bills sent to them and stuff like that. And for them to know that we're here, because bottom line is there is force with numbers. Positive force with numbers.
The censorship. You know, I mean.
Yeah. Tell me how to spell that again? It won't come up on my phone, so I spelled it wrong.
In your map, yeah. Azer, Azer, Baijan, Azerbaijan. Is Russian, sort of. You know, it's one of those. It's one of those old. It's like Afghanistan. It's very old people. Very long in different traditions, and I don't know much about Azerbaijan, but I think we're about to find out, you know, especially if they call in. So again, the Skype line's open, but yeah, as far as sharing the two most important things you can do if you want to be a citizen advocate, and I'm not talking about a citizen legislator, that's different. I have to really work with people to, you know, sort of show you how the legislative process works in terms of actually writing the bills, writing simple, coherent, logical bills that can go directly to legislatures without sounding like a lawyer. So it's kind of an interesting skill I sort of pretty much developed it myself for how to do this. And this is why I need to work with people. So there is consistency in the fact that your format is pretty, you know, and it's nice to have a format. It's very simple. If you want to write a bill, you have an introduction which describes, you know, what you're trying to say and why it's needed. You have to do that. And then you have two other sections. One, what the current law is, and two, what do you want to change it to? And that could be deletions, it could be additions, it could be whole new classes of law, it could be entire new government departments, it could be getting rid of government departments. Of course, everybody screams now. They're like, what do you mean, Greg? What are you talking about adding new government departments? Are you insane? Well, that's debatable. But the two bills that I have to increase two new government departments, one is the Department of Freedom. Okay, no one's ever had that. No government has ever had a Department of Freedom before, which goes around and looks at the other departments to make sure they're complying with the Constitution. So we'd have a government department exclusively for ensuring the other government departments are doing their job properly. And that would be an elected position. It would be the, Secretary of Freedom. It's kind of an interesting concept, right? And so they would go by the Constitution, and they would review regulations before they became law. They would go back and review old regulations and maybe send them back to the regulatory agencies and say, wait a minute. You can't do that. That's not in the Constitution. This would be in addition to the courts, which are way too slow. This would be a much more activist position. So I'm thinking of a Department of Freedom. The other, I actually wrote that for Mike Huckabee, and so I'm hoping to talk to him about that. He'd be a good person to head that up. The second department I wrote for Newt Gingrich, and that's the Department of Innovation. And these are on writeyourlaws.com. These are some of the earliest bills that I came up with. The Department of Innovation would be solely charged with getting rid of all the ancient archaic technology and bringing the government into at least the 21st century, but looking towards the 22nd. And the big charge for the Department of Innovation would be to find a way around or find a different model for government, right? Instead of a bureaucratic model. And so instead of the bureaucracies, they'd actually work off something completely different from that. And that's pretty much, those are the two government agencies. And the only reason I would create a government agency is to get rid of several others. And so the Department of Innovation would be consolidating, getting rid of duplication, going through all the various departments, you know, getting rid of the typewriters and vacuum tubes and replacing them with, you know, modern computers and chip technology and all that kind of stuff. And just updating incredibly, because some of the oldest technology out there, you know, is in the government departments, because they don't care. They don't. So those are the two that I had in mind. Did you find Azerbaijan on a map, and then can we get a, do you have a cultural, historical, economic profile that you could share, or should I look that up?
Well, I got it in Word. So it's sometimes considered part of Asia and sometimes considered part of more European Europe.
Uh-huh.
And let's see, it's the Caspian Sea lies around, along the coast, and then okay. Russia, and then Iran, and then west is Azerbaijan. Okay, wait. Well, west is Georgia, and I thought there was something else. Yeah, so Georgia.
Yeah. Oh, so then the Caspian Sea.
Armenia. Armenia is west. Russia, Iran, Georgia. Yeah. So they're in the middle of some very interesting other countries.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to have a call from there simply because I don't know what the current government is. Obviously it's an Islamic Republic. They've got a crescent moon and a star right on their flag. Republic, let me see if I can pull up Wikipedia, not necessarily a great source, but Azerbaijan, what do we got here? Republic of Azerbaijan, a country located at the boundary of Eastern Europe and Western Asia. Yeah, I think you said that. Azerbaijan Democratic Republic. Oh, that's okay. They proclaimed its independence from the Trans-Caucasian Democratic Federative Republic in 1918. Yes, again, World War I, we talked about that yesterday, how that changed the world. What did you think of yesterday's show? For me, it was very challenging, very draining, and very quiet. I'm reading these amazingly intense poems written in combat or from combat or by combat, you know, by soldiers. And it's very solemn, very, very somber mood. But I guess apparently, you know, folks were kind of intrigued the fact that we would even do something like that.
I think it was a nice show honoring our veterans. And basically it was Veterans Day. So it doesn't matter what we think. It was an honor of Veterans Day.
Yeah.
And I thought it was, I thought it was very nice. It says here in January 1990, Nakhchivan declared independence from USSR. So they must have been part of Russia back.
Yeah, they were part of
Soviet
Union.
Not even that long ago,
yeah.
1990. Yeah.
Well, that's, you figure Glasnost, you remember, of course, Reagan brought the wall down in Berlin during his term. I think it was sometime before 88. So it would have been like 86, 87 is when the Berlin Wall came down. And so you had that. It's fascinating because I was in Berlin in 82. And so during Reagan's first term, I was there. The wall was still up. They still had, I remember because I was there at the wall and I was watching an American Jeep with a 50 caliber machine gun, you know, pointed at East German soldiers on the other side of the wall, on our side, you know, repairing it so that their side's people couldn't escape. It was fascinating. I'm sitting there and I'm talking to the guys with the Jeep and they're there with the guns and it's like, you know, dude, we're busy. What are you doing? You know, me, I don't walk up to anybody, right? I have no idea. You know, I'm going to walk up to these huge East German guards with AK-47s. How you doing, dude? You know, give me five. You know, I mean, I wasn't quite that bad, but it was close. But anyway, yeah, so it was fascinating to see that and then see the wall come down. So Glasnost, Perestroika, Mikhail Gorbachev, who actually ended up in San Francisco when I was there at his World Peace Center, this beautiful property in the Presidio, which is the old army base, you know, right at the base of the Golden Gate Bridge. So he didn't have it too tough. Yeah. We should look into Azerbaijan. We should start looking at the countries now that I think about it. Might be interesting, you know, not last minute like we're doing now, but let's take a look at some of the places where Action Radio is heard, some of the places you wouldn't expect, like Bangladesh, for example, listens to Action Radio. Vietnam listens to Action Radio. Eritrea listens to Action Radio. Morocco listens to Action Radio. You know, so we've got folks all over the world. Not huge numbers yet, but there will be, that are intrigued by what we do here. And so, you know, it's interesting when we talk about Friday's kind of becoming like gun day around here. We've got three gun reports. And so it's quite interesting that, what is this? Let me see. We've got, well, Jim's out today. So we have Shirley Wattrall, who's going to be filling in for Jim because he's up once a month. And then and she has a guest. So my guest has a guest. So we have Diana Mueller from the DC Project is going to join us. And so that's a Women in Guns organization, and we'll find out more about exactly what they do. I've heard about them before, but better than they tell it. So yeah, so we've got some cool stuff happening. Anyway, news of this. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say the interesting thing is Azerbaijan. They said is mostly Sharia Muslim, but then you go down and they said that what religion is. Oh wait, no, that's wrong. That was Armenia is 97% Christian. Well, that's interesting. But they said, even though that's what they are, the government is secular, and they only have, like in the center of Baku, just one Muslim shop. So basically they're saying that it's, you know, Sharia Muslim. But, you know, obviously if they only have one place of worship there, there's got to be a lot more. But
Muslim light.
And just like they're rich in natural resources, and the economy is heavily involved with oil and energy exports.
I think they have pipelines. Don't they have some of the Russian to Europe pipelines
through
there? I would
assume so.
Yeah, okay.
But
yeah,
they support Israel. Wow, so that's even better than this country. This,
yeah,
I can't say this country. Let me take that back. This administration.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't even say that. You know me, President. What do I call him? You know, insurrectionist Biden, and the twiddlies. Yeah, they're proving to be stupid. These people are ideologically insane. I mean, the energy secretary says we don't have an energy problem. The transportation secretary says we don't have a supply problem. The Treasury, Janet Yellen, I think former Treasury person, says that we need to print more money. I mean, these people are irrational. Or they're just hell-bent on destroying the country, which is probably more the truth. And you've got, Brandon up there at the top not having a clue what's going on. And even in his own people are saying things, and he gets surprised by it constantly. It's like, dude, didn't you get the morning script? I mean, is that what your morning briefing is for, to tell you what to say during the day? Obviously, the handlers have a lot of work to do. But it's a crazy place. But, yeah, but now Azerbaijan, they may have been on the Abraham Accords. which was what Trump was negotiating with a bunch of different countries, particularly Saudi Arabia and Israel. And what they all realize is that, you know, better to join than fight, because fighting isn't getting them anywhere. And a lot of the countries that are going kind of crazy trying to fight Israel, that like Iran that wants to destroy Israel, it's not working. And the countries that are powerful enough to destroy Israel are powerful enough to destroy their Arab neighbors, and they aren't thrilled with it. Especially Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabians are Arab and Iranians are Persian. And they've got a history that going back, what, several thousand years? Looks like we have somebody on the Skype line. And so if you get a chance to check them, let's see what's going on. It's too early for Alan, unless he's calling in early for some reason. Anyway, we'll figure it out. Let me check my Skype line and see if that's Alan. Nope, not yet. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
That the Skype line has any number you want to associate with it.
Yeah, can you grab that one and see who's there?
And then I will.
Okay, all right, perfect, thanks. Let me talk about some of the things let me see, I've got so many stories here. What's the most obnoxious story I can find? Here we go. Intellectual Takeout. And this is from November 11th, so this is yesterday. And I find this fascinating. It says, White House tells businesses to ignore the court order that halted Biden's vaccine mandate. And this is on Saturday. This is by John Miltimore, who is the editor, I believe, Intellectual Takeout.
Good
so from yesterday. On, what? Hello? Oh, did you make him live already? Oh, there we go. Gene's pushing buttons.
Yeah, I pushed the wrong one. So it's like they need to have him farther apart or something.
Okay, it looks like
I'll
calling
push
her.
It.
Yeah,
okay. He's calling early.
That's okay. Well, he's there, so we might as well go to it. Yeah. Hey, Alan, we got a time change. I should have told you earlier. How you doing? Oh, did you put him on hold again?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, let me. That's okay.
I'm messing with buttons.
Gene's messing with buttons. Don't blame me. It's not my fault this time. It usually is, but not this time. There we go. So, Alan, yeah, we're going to get you early, but we changed times. We turned our clocks back Sunday. And I'm sorry. I should have emailed you. I should have messaged you sooner. It's my fault. But since you're here, let's talk about Belize and see if Pianki will join us, and we can find out what Pianki wants for dinner. How you doing?
Pleasant. Good morning, Greg. Good
Thank
morning
you,
from Belize, Greg, and Action Radio. This is Alan Dawson.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard what we were just talking about. Azerbaijan has just joined our happy family here at Action Radio, so we are expanding. And so we've just been going over a little bit of because we don't know much about Azerbaijan. Have you had a chance to travel as a tour guide? Where have you been in the world? I'm just curious. I don't think we ever talked about that.
You know what? I have only been to USA and parts of, well, most of Central America. I have not been to Panama and Costa Rica yet. But just I've done like about 30 U.S. states of the 50 so far. My goal was to do all 50 by the time I turn 50, but yeah, I'm falling short now. I'll be 49 next year.
Oh, you're getting old.
Don't say that word.
Hey, you know what? Age is an attitude. If you're healthy and you work out and you know, get some sleep, all the things that I didn't do the first couple of years of Action Radio because I didn't have time. Well, listen, starting a new company, it's a lifetime commitment. You marry the company, you know, it's all you really have time for if you're going to do it properly. But what you might want to try, and I think you would absolutely love Europe. I think especially as an English-speaking person, the UK, the United Kingdom, England, Scotland, Ireland, Wales, you know, those places I think you'd find fascinating, especially Belize being, you know, British Honduras. So you can go back and say, aha, see, we're independent, you know. Just walk around and, you know, go to Gene, we should all go over in England. We got to start finding places in the world to go. We have to pick a different destination every year. But can you see all of us in a pub? Alan, we'd have a great time in a pub. It'd be fun. We got to get to Europe. Oh, I think it'd be a blast. Oh, yeah.
I need to get to London. London would be my first place I'd like to go to.
Which one? To England?
Yeah, England.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense.
England.
Yeah, Australia, too. You should hop down there. It's a bit of a journey, but I think you'd really like Australia also. So go hit the English-speaking world, and then you can try your hand at some of the other places. And you know what? Most of Europe speaks English. So when I bummed around there at the age of 22, it was a blast. And I learned enough words in this language.
22?
Except, yeah, I just got a backpack and nobody would go with me. So I said, okay, fine, I'll do it myself. It's usually how these things work. So I hopped on a plane, got off in London, knew nobody, you know, just said, okay, now what do I do? Here I am in London, right? I was exhausted after the flight and it's early morning and I'm, you know, thinking, well, I better find a place to stay. So I go up the information booth and, you know, where do us crazy Americans stay? And they pointed me to a rather, as they say, dodgy section of London. And I found a pension, a guest house, and spent about 3 wonderful days there and then headed for Greece. You know, so it was fascinating.
Right.
Once I got the hang of it, you know, I was all set. So we should talk about solo travel sometime. Anyway, how's the weather? How's the economy? How's Belize? How's the tourists? What's going on this week? Got some news of this week?
Well, we had just about 60 degrees all week long.
Oh, wow.
Today, I woke up to like 72 degrees I woke up to today.
Okay.
Sorry, I got on a little late, actually. I just jumped out, saw your message, and hopped right on.
No, you're actually early.
you're about six minutes early.
You're not late at all.
22 after 6.
Oh, yeah. We're the same time now. So
oh,
I got you at 7.
Okay.
I got you at 7. See, don't forget, we turned our clocks back an hour. Belize, do you turn your clocks back or no?
No, we don't. We don't. We are 6:23 right now. We don't do the rollback.
Yeah, so we're 6:23 also.
Okay. Super, super.
That means you're smart. I don't know why we turn them back yet here in this country. It makes, to me, no sense. But
and yeah, I don't know when they're going to stop doing it. When are they going to stop doing? Greg, can me, you, and Gene do something to enforce them not doing it starting this year, next year?
Well, actually, I was trying to kick the butt of the state government here because Florida passed a law where it's permanent daylight savings time. And that, to me, makes infinitely more sense. You know, so you get an extra hour of daylight, and there's no reason to turn back. You know, and it's interesting where we are here in the Panhandle. We're in the central time zone. Most of Florida is Eastern, East Coast time. But because we're in that leftward expansion that, you know, when you take you go to the top of Florida, you turn left, that little extension, that's where I am. So I'm under Alabama. And so we're here at Pensacola, which is the far northwest corner of Florida. But the 10 counties from Escambia over to, I forgot which one it is, but it's where Tallahassee, the capital, is. So the county just before Tallahassee, you know, these 10 counties, we're central time. So we got the same time until the clocks go forward again. And I think it's March. So, take an extra hour of sleep until 7, and you'll catch us then. Now, Gene made an interesting point. You know, why don't we hold it steady? I would rather hold it steady on daylight savings time because I think it's better overall. The only difference is the kids, they say it's dark when they go to school. Well, okay, fine. Start the kids an hour later. You know, have the kids at a closer time.
Exactly.
When, you know, I mean, what time do kids start school in Belize?
8:30.
See, now that makes sense. So the parents can drop their kids off and go to work, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's how it works usually.
Yeah, see, here we got school starting 7:30, and parents work, what, somewhere between 8 and 9, depending on what they do. So sometimes there's a big gap between when kids are dropped off and when parents go to work, and that makes no sense. So something, it would make more sense to me, if they're worried about the darkness, then just start kids an hour later in the wintertime. Start school an hour earlier in the spring and the fall so the kids have more daylight in the afternoon for sports and playing. You know, most of the country's too cold to go out and play after school. All the kids do because, you know, some places they can just handle like in Toronto. We didn't have a choice. I was a kid in Toronto. If you wanted to play in the wintertime, it was freezing. It just wasn't a choice. But it was miserable. That's why I like a warmer climate. Okay. Well, Gene, what do you think? Would you rather have full-time daylight saving or full-time standard time? Gene, if you had a choice.
I mean, I really don't care. Just leave it one way or the other. That's all I care about. Because it doesn't matter if it gets dark an hour earlier or light out an hour earlier. Technically, I like to wake up more in the light because to me, then it means it's daylight and our time to get up. But, you know, I've gotten up in the dark for years.
Yeah.
But I don't care. I just want them to keep it one way or the other.
Okay.
And
not
switching it back and forth like a ping pong ball.
Well, let me do something on that. I should do my annual, daylight saving time show. So I make a little note to myself. I'll see if I can get some information on Monday because we should be full-time daylight saving. The only thing, problem is the holdup is Congress. And so we have to start investigating that again. Alan, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
I'll make a big note from...
Stop changing it.
Yeah.
Well,
it really screws people
up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so we had a really busy week of tourism. 3 days ships came in this week.
Okay.
And it's going to be that way. It's picking up for the rest of the month in December. Yeah, we got 23 ships scheduled for the month of November.
Wow.
So it's getting busy again.
Yeah, and you still got – we're only halfway in November. Yeah, you're happy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think I asked you last week.
You know what? I'm getting happy. I'm getting happier because I'm getting more work now. I mean, this week I got my first 2-day work for the month from cruise tourism. Yeah.
So does your company call you as needed or because in San Francisco when I was a tour guide, it really slowed down the wintertime, but we still had work. You know, it was like a reduced schedule, but they still kept us busy for the most part.
Uh-huh.
But in the summertime, of course, it was crazy. You know, it was insane. Same thing with you?
Yeah,
did you get laid off or what?
No, they would message us whenever they need, whatever day we're going to be working. But before COVID, I mean, we were working like year round. But April to November, October, those are the months it gets slow here. The busy months, they're November through to April.
Right.
Then May through to October, it slows. So we would just take turns. We'll take turns to work more days.
So everybody gets some work.
So many guys working.
Yeah.
But now there's only 3 pair of us that's fully vaccinated that can work out of the 9 of us. So only 3 pair of us are working, and so we are able to get more days now in the month. So that's a good thing. Like I mentioned to you last week, the government says one in four persons in this country, they're employed in some aspects of tourism or the other.
Right.
And it accounts for it's the biggest foreign exchange earner for the country, which is good because a lot of the merchants, they depend on these foreign exchange for their purchasing of their goods, for their stores, their businesses. Remember, Belize we do not do a lot of manufacturing. We import more than 80%.
I hear birdies and dogs in the background. That's kind of cool. Are you in your porch just hanging out? Yeah.
No, actually, I'm in the room. I'm in the room, and I guess he hears the birds in the tree, and he's barking after the brown jays.
Yes, he is. Just to let folks know again, Alan's calling us from Belize. So he's out there in the tropics in the Caribbean. I mean, you know, you've got monkeys in the trees and tropical birds and, you know, all kinds of really cool critters there. So anything you hear, actually that's kind of part of the charm of being able to talk to you in Belize. Any of the critters that make noise, don't worry about it. It's kind of fun, especially the birds. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, it is fun.
Yeah. Anyway, so you're talking about the economy. I kind of got you sidetracked.
Yeah, so... So in the past, I mean, Belize used to depend a lot on the combination of sugar and citrus export, and also
okay.
timber. Timber was one of the main things, but timber is not a big thing now. Citrus and sugar, we do export a lot from Belize. Did you know that, Greg? Citrus.
No, I didn't. It actually leads to a question I was having. We hear about banana republics and how United Fruit and some other huge American corporations used to exploit workers and countries and just take, you know, I think Costa Rica and coffee and different countries. You know, the U.S. ran their agricultural produce, paid the workers nothing, took their resources out, and so they'd keep prices low for Americans. Does Belize have a history of that? And then I'm curious about sugar and some of the other crops you've got.
Yeah, somewhat with the banana industry. We do export bananas too, right? If you ever see bananas in your store with the Fife's logo, F-Y-F-F-E-S, Fife's, that's from Belize.
Okay.
And we export, we export that from Belize. To the U.S., we also export our shrimp, conch, lobster, red snapper. Yeah, we export a lot of that to the U.S. I like to tell friends that whenever you're visiting Belize, you have mm-hmm. tasted Belize before you came here, because we do ship to Long John Silver's, the Olive Gardens, Red Lobster. So the lobster tails come from Belize. They're sold in Red Lobster. And the jumbo shrimp, they go to Long John Silver's and Olive Garden. And then the Florida orange juice and the Tropicana, we send them the concentrate from Belize.
How much of Tropicana comes from Belize? I'd be curious. I thought that was a Florida company mostly.
I think 10%. 10%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, still a big amount. So
yeah, that's
really
interesting.
Yeah. I'm surprised Pianchi hasn't called. I guess he thinks you're coming on the next half hour. We'll have to hold you for a couple minutes past 7 just to make sure Pianchi can get his dinner menu. Because I know he's going to call it at some point. That'd be fun. Okay, so how much – so because I don't remember seeing any agriculture. Is it in the central region of Belize? Is it west coast or western area of the state? Where are your farms? Or is it just outside the Belize city and I just missed them?
No. Like if you go down, you've been to the Cave Tubing Park, right? Where the tourists go.
No,
Cave
I haven't.
Tubing.
No, I did two Altun Ha. I just went to the Mayan pyramids.
Altun-ha.
I love Altun Ha.
Shelby was the one that went down there to the Cave Tubing Park. Anyways, in that direction.
You're confusing me with Shelby?
South of the country.
No, I'm just teasing you. I said, you're confusing Shelby? We are very different.
No, I'm just
teasing you.
I'm not confusing. Come on. Shelby, a little tiny petite lady. And Greg is like a what, 6 foot giant? Greg, are you 6 feet?
A 6'1".
Okay, that's what I remember.
Just over 6 foot. Hey, listen, once you're over 6 foot, you know, you gotta, you know, take every inch above it you can get, because I was 6'2", but gravity sucks, as they say. So, you know, lost an inch over the decades, which affected my daughter. Was happy to point out one day when she wanted to measure my height. It's like, you know, you're not 6'2" anymore, and is. You know, 8-year-old yelling at me was hysterical. Anyway.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's in the south, Greg.
Okay.
It country, that's where you find the citrus and the banana farms. If you're mm-hmm. driving out of Belize City to the capital, that's like 50 miles from Belize City.
Okay.
And you drive another 53 miles, you're driving through the Hummingbird Highway. That's through the elevated part of the country, the mountains. So you're going through citrus farms, and by the time you're out of the citrus farm, you're heading into the banana farms, banana fields.
Oh, interesting.
So it's a beautiful drive down there.
Do they grow naturally? I mean, can you just, you know, find bananas growing wild if you're walking on nature trails or things like that?
No, you need to actually have a part of the tree to plant them. They call it the little, you know what, growing up, all I know, they call it the sucker. It's like the little head. And then you just bury them right beneath the surface of the ground, and you see a little thing popping up, and that's it. That's, there goes a banana tree and a plantain. You know, a banana tree and a plantain, they're pretty similar, right?
Plantain, yeah, but yeah. I'm not a big plantain fan. I tried them. I think it's an acquired taste. I have to, have them again. But, bananas, yeah, we all grew up with bananas. You know, I mean, just because. You know, banana splits on our ice cream when we're kids. You know, so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're actually really good for you, too. There's a lot of fat and sugar in them. If you leave them too long, they sort of build up that residual sugar. But,
right.
So,
Rick, so you don't like the fried plantain? The ripe fried plantain? You don't like it?
Well, no, I didn't like it. It was different. I mean, it's something I should probably try more of. Sometimes, you know, the first time it's like, oh, that's kind of weird. You got to kind of get used to it. Mango, same thing. I think I'd really like mangoes if I had a few more. But I just, you know, it's like a once in a great while thing. And it's just kind of weird because you're not used to it. So I think it's something I should try more of. So I'll see if I can improve my tropical palate, as they say. So I come to Belize and go, yeah, bring on the fried plantains, baby. Let's go. Yeah.
Oh,
go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. And let's hope you develop a taste for it, because in Belize we have over 15 different species of mangoes. I'm talking 15 different sizes and 15 different tastes of mangoes. You've got to love mangoes, man.
I do. Well, I will now. I mean, you know, hey, I'm still a young guy. I can develop new things. Yeah. Do you know what we should do sometime, too?
Of course.
You know what would be fun to do is if you, I don't know if you could play it on the air on their show, send me some YouTubes of Belize music, you know, especially if you have traditional music or something like that. It'd be kind of fun to play that as well. And we'll see.
Okay,
see what
sure.
See how Belize got its start. Now, do you have is the music like the pan flute, original music? You know, I get some of the South American bands that are outstanding. Some of the indigenous music, they play these wonderful pan flutes and things. You know, I'm sure you got rock and roll and everything else now. But what's more traditional Belize music? What do you guys listen to? What got the place started?
We do listen to, you know, the music that you hear out in the Caribbean. We're pretty similar when it comes to music. They call them soca. Soca music. And what's like for example, this month of November, we commemorate the arrival of the Garifunas to Belize, who are the African people.
Uh-huh.
So we have four main ethnic group of people that makes up the population, that being the Creole, the Mestizos, the Mayans, and the Garifuna, plural Garinagus. So they came over from St. Vincent and Jamaica in 1802, and they settled in the southern part of the country. And they love grown food like cocoa, cassava, yam, you know, the plantains, bananas, yeah. So this month we're commemorating the arrival of them, 19th of November. There's a lot of drumming activity going on right now.
Wow.
Of course, there's not going to be a lot of big activities since the pandemic, but in smaller groups, families, they're still going to be having a big celebration. So a lot of drumming. These people are very, very artistic with their drums and their music and singing in their African language, and so that's typical of the southern part of Belize. But Caribbean music, soca, reggae, those are music that you hear around. Of course, we have a lot of influence from North America, so we get all your stuff too playing.
Reggae is interesting.
We still play a lot of Caribbean.
Yeah. So reggae developed, I guess, in Jamaica. I've been sort of a Bob Marley fan for years and years, and some of the other musicians. It's such a totally different style. It's fascinating. So, you know, I play in bands, and it's like, let's do some reggae stuff. And, of course, they're still stuck in the 80s. So the classic rockers are like, come on, guys, you know, stretch, do something different. Okay, fine. But I'll work on that. But, yeah, anytime you have a music festival or anything like that, that'd be fascinating. So the four groups, you said Creole, Mayan, and what was the African group name?
Garifuna, and the Mestizos.
Who are the Mestizos?
No, the Mestizos, they're a mixture of Mayans with Spaniards. They settled to the northern part of our country, and those people, they like a lot of maize, corn, and they like hot sauces. Yeah, they like hot sauces. Don't give them jalapenos. This is jalapenos, that's for kiddies' party. Give them habanero.
Habaneros? Oh, geez. Yeah. See, I'm such a lightweight. I got to tell you a funny story. When I was in Boston, before I moved out to California, Mexican food, this is in the 80s, And before I moved to California, Mexican food had just started showing up in Boston. And, of course, our diet up there, you know, baked beans, lobster, clam chowder, you know, there's no spice. I mean, there's nothing, you know, nothing hot in it at all. Okay. It's just like, you know, butter and potatoes and, you know, anyway. So when Mexican food first hit and I tried my first salsa, I almost died. And it wasn't that hot. I mean, because the folks there are laughing at me, right? So the Mexican waiters, I'm sure they're, you know, recently arrived across the border somehow. I'm not going to ask how, but anyway. They're just cracking up because here they are, you know, to them, this is like, you know, water, right? To me, it's like fire.
Yeah.
So, and of course, all of us, we had no clue. You know, we didn't know. We were raised on baked beans, lobster, and clam chowder, right? And so then I get to California, and I was able to try all these different foods and spices. There's an area that you probably love in the Mission District of San Francisco, because it is like every Central and South American country is represented there in restaurants. And so you can go from Brazilian to Argentinian to Chilean to Honduran to, I'm sure there's a Belizean restaurant there somewhere. And they're all like within a block of each other. You know, so it's a fascinating
really?
Place. Oh, yeah. And they have the
artwork.
How come
I never found that place, Greg?
What, when you were in San Francisco? I don't know. Did you ask me?
I worked out there for about 3 or 4 months. I never found that place, man. Of course,
Mission District?
After work, we head home.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So you can't do that. You got to get on walk around. But there's one place called Balmy Avenue. That's B-A-L-M-Y. Balmy Avenue is a street that is all, the entire street is artwork. And the artwork keeps changing. And I remember one of the priests that was killed in, I forgot whether it was Mexico, Father Humberto, somebody was assassinated by the gangs, by the cartels. His picture was there. But just, and the artwork changes all the time. It's a, look up Balmy Avenue, B-A-L-M-Y, Balmy Avenue. It's in the Mission. It's a walking street
Avenue,
only.
Okay.
Yeah. And everything's painted. The garage doors are painted. The telephone poles are painted. And the paintings change. But this is not just graffiti spray paint. We're talking, you know, museum quality artwork. And this is a famous street. Oh, yeah. It's amazing. And there's another one, too. I've forgotten the name of it. But, yeah. Just ask me, Alan.
I'm heading out. Yeah, I'm heading out there next year. I'm going to definitely head out there.
Okay. Well, ask me before you go. I was a tour guide. You know, I was it's my business. I'll tell you all the neat little places, you know, go hunt around. There's another place you want to go to called Bolinas, and it's over in Marin County. And it's the hippies that don't want to be discovered. They're the ones that take the direction signs down so people can't find it. So they paint the dumpsters paisley. There's another fun place to go.
Oh, my goodness.
That's called Bolinas in Marin County. Marin is absolutely beautiful. It's where all the rich, crazy people. It's where all the hippies went when they made money. So you can like a Marin. Yeah. Let's have Pansy's on the line, too, so we can go back to dinner. Yeah, go ahead, Alan. What were you going to say?
Oh, he's
first?
Hungry. Let's hear it.
Oh, you want to go? All right.
Hey, you guys.
Welcome back.
You guys have breakfast yet? Where's everything? Gene, what did they do?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning,
you want to talk to Alan directly? Feel free. I'll just kind of hang back here.
Well, what's for lunch?
What's for lunch? Hey, conch is in season again, so I'll do conch soup today. You want to try that?
I'm a game for anything, as long as it's good.
What is it? What's in it?
Conch soup? Oh, it's got potatoes in it. It's got okras in it. Lots of pieces of conch. It's like a sticky kind of a soup, and they serve it with white rice.
Sounds good.
Oh man, you said okra. That is good. Okra and rice. Boy.
Yeah, do you guys know what conch is? I don't think Alan's ever even told you what it is. Guys? Alan, they don't know what conch is. You should probably tell them, you know, what kind of shellfish it is.
Oh my goodness, they don't know what conch is. Conch
is that beautiful
shell that you always see whenever you travel out in the Caribbean. People paint them and they design stuff on them and they like to sell them. It's what's inside that shell. Fishermen will take that out and they will sell them by pounds to the local people, and they will make conch fritters, conch soup, fried conch, stewed conch.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And they make a nice horn.
Like
the shell is big enough. You can make a horn out of it and make a signal. I mean, that's been used for thousands of years, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I'm an old tuba player.
I'll use a horn to warn you when somebody's dead coming.
Yeah. Have you seen those movies in the Caribbean where somebody's standing on a hill blowing a big shell? That's a conch shell.
Wow, I didn't know that.
This is why. This is, see, Alan, I told you it's gonna be fun. Go ahead, Alan.
It is. Bianchi, get what it is. He knows what it is, right?
Let's find out. Bianchi?
Yeah, like the little guy on Fantasy Island used to say, the plane, where they use those horns to say, the ships are coming.
Yeah.
That's it, Bianchi.
See, I knew it was going to be fun to have you on just because there's such differences and things that you know and take for granted that Americans don't know. I mean, it's one thing to come as a tourist, but what's going to be really great about having you on is to be able to take the time to really get to know the country. And we'll get to know more countries in the Caribbean area that you know and some of the other places. So this is going to be, you're representing, Belize to Action Radio. And so I still think you should tell the Tourist Bureau what you're doing just so you can get some credit for this because they may want to get in on this as well. You never know. I mean, I'd be happy to have some of the official tourist folks on from the Belize Government Tourist Bureau. But this is a great exchange.
Sounds
it's a great
good.
Way to do things. Yeah, yeah. So things that you know, like conch shells and things like that, but I bet you Bianchi has an old family recipe that you've never heard of. Bianchi, if you want to share, feel free. Got a rib recipe or something?
Well, he mentioned some of the things that's real favorite to me, like okra, for instance. Of course, the fish, the plantains, whether they boil or whether they're fried. But that is really good eating, and it's natural, too. It's not the kind that belch up at night and overcome you, give you monster dreams.
This is why you never know
and
what's going to happen.
And the group we mentioned,
radio.
Like the Mesos and the Mayans, you're talking about indigenous people that's been in the Americas for since the Big Bird brought them over and dropped them off. So that does a lot of history. It's fun to study. It's fun to watch their culture and how they still do things like they've been doing for thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah, actually, Alan, Bianchi's really good on ancient history and African history. So if you have any questions for him, he has a wealth of information. And so this is why, I love these exchanges. And we're going to have more folks from around the world calling in. Just to let you both know, Bianchi and Alan, well, I talked to Alan initially, but Azerbaijan has just checked in, on our world map. And so we have listeners there. And so Gene and I have been sort of going over some of the facts and figures of Azerbaijan, a place that neither of us knew hardly anything about. But that's part of the fun of this, as well, as we get to do some world tours and talk about some of the countries that listen in. And, of course, I'm curious why they do. It's got to be freedom, and especially when we get to some of our legislative chats, if they go to our website, writeyourlaws.com, that's WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com, some of the things that we do, whereas just regular people supplying laws directly to our government. Actually, that raises an interesting point. Alan, do you think that would be something that Belizeans, is that, I don't even know if that's the right word, but the folks in Belize, would they be interested in participating in government in a way beyond just, voting? Would they be interested in saying, well, we've got this law that doesn't quite work for us. Maybe if we can write a better one and submit it to government, maybe there's a way to get it adopted. Because that's what I do. That's what the show's about. Would that be something you think you might be interested in or other folks might be?
And it is going to be just a few people that would be interested in stuff like that. Yeah, the ordinary people, for the most part, they're interested in just the immediate voting process at election times.
Okay. So are folks pretty happy there with the government? They leave you alone for the most part? Or are they into everything that you're doing?
Yeah, for the most part. But I've seen now in the recent years, I think people are just being influenced by North America for the most part when it comes to how they behave and stuff like that, like protesting and everything. It's picking up here now. I mean, it's picking up here. People, if they're not happy with something in government they're doing, it's picking up. I mean, this past hike with the fuel prices, I mean, we're up at $6 U.S. for a gallon of gas right now.
Wow.
When I would say that number on the train tour yesterday, these people are like, what? And you hear a lot of cackling in the back there for a long time about $6 for a gallon of gas. That's what we're paying. And the people are now, they're starting to protest now. I've been seeing on a blog that people are planning to do like a strike. Don't show up for work on a busy, busy, busy day because, it's just going up too high in the time of a pandemic.
I think it's going to get like that way here, unfortunately.
Yeah.
How do they generate electricity there in Belize now?
Electricity is from hydroelectric power dams. We have three of them in the south and the west part of the country, and that's generating about 80% of electricity for the country. But we still do buy about 20% from Mexico, and that powers the northern part of the country still.
Well, hydroelectric is the most efficient way, and of course, it's the cheapest too.
Yeah,
gravity
many,
and water.
Many years we used to use the diesel generator, big old noisy diesel generator in different areas. Many years that's how we used to generate power. But yeah, it's been hydroelectric power dam now for over 25 years.
Has that changed the rivers at all in the natural environment?
Nah, not much.
Okay.
Very little change.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Yeah. So that makes that's wonderful, you know, but I'm curious about the protests. And so does your fuel come from the same places our fuel comes from? Do you have the same American oil companies down there, or would you have, I guess, Royal Dutch Shell or British Petroleum is probably pretty big there, I would think. Do you still have like British companies left over?
I don't think so. We're getting for many years we got our fuel from Venezuela. It comes in on an oil tanker under water, and then they're parked about 3 miles out in the water, and then it's pumped in with pipelines underneath the ocean, underneath the Caribbean Sea, into some storage tanks. And then from there, they deliver them around the country. For many years, it used to be from Venezuela, but I heard now we're getting from other Central American countries now, Guatemala, El Salvador.
So wait a minute. So if Guatemala and El Salvador are exporting oil, how, why is the economy so bad that millions of people want to run to the United States? Or are these the people that just don't want to work? That they just want the freebie benefits of American taxpayers? What's going on? This could be a really important discussion, not just for today, but a little bit over time.
Yeah.
To find out the
true.
Economies of these
that's
countries.
True.
Why? So tell me about that. How much exporting of oil, and how are those economies in those surrounding countries? I'd be curious.
You know what? I'm not familiar. That's what I was thinking of doing a study on, how much of that do they produce? Because I'm not familiar how much of these things these people produce. I mean, and I know for many, many years it's always been from Venezuela. But since, remember that problem that Venezuela had with the change of power and all that? And
yeah, the socialists.
It was since those problems.
Like communist dictatorship.
So I think
they come to the United States to engage in the industry of acquiring and exporting back home U.S. dollars because they go so far. You can build your own family factory. You can build your own family business by exporting U.S. dollars back to Guatemala, Honduras, or El Salvador.
Even Belize. Tell you what, a lot of Belizeans that left this place, and it is said that we have probably about 200,000 Belizeans living abroad. You know, a lot of them, they would, you know, send money back home, and they would build up big homes, and then when they retire, they move back home, and that's where they enjoy the big homes. Belizeans do that a lot. They work in the U.S., and they send money back home, and they build up their big homes that they want to retire in. Maybe they put up a business. Yeah, all these countries, that's what they do. Because the money doubles, right? To the American dollars, it's always been fixed from 1964 at a 2-to-1. One U.S. for two Belize dollars.
So they double their money.
They collect Social Security. Yeah, they collect U.S. Social Security. They only have to show back up to the U.S. once every 6 months, touch the ground, get back on the plane, and go back to Belize or go back to wherever they come from in order to continue the Social Security payments.
That's exactly how they do it, Pianki. That's how they do it.
So wait a minute. These are Belize nationals who are coming to work in the United States? Are they on some kind of work permit, or how are they doing it? And how long do they have to be here before they can qualify for Social Security? I don't mind that necessarily if they're actually working here legally. I mean, then people are entitled to what they're entitled to. I mean, it's up to us to change the Social Security system, you know, to be more reflective of people that are actually here, you know, longer and as citizens. That's what it's supposed to be for. But how long do they – who are they working for? Are these, like, work visas or are Pianchi – excuse me, Alan, how are they getting
they
this?
Can come here – They come here on work visas, and after they've been here for a while, they can apply for their citizenship. They never denounce their citizenship back home, because that's the whole grand plan, is to, like he just described, build a big home and go back and live like a king.
Yeah,
that
makes
it.
Sense.
Yeah, and Greg, I'm talking about Belizeans that's left here from 60s, 70s, even 80s, you know. They got their green card. They got their citizenship, you know.
But, of course, you know, being a British Commonwealth country or at least, you know, British Honduras, the British system is, you know, once a British subject, always a British subject. So you never lose your Belizean citizenship, no matter how many other passports you have, right?
Yeah, exactly. A lot of them carry dual citizenship, Belize passport, American passport.
Interesting, because to get an American passport, you're supposed to renounce all other citizenships. I mean, that's the whole point of becoming an American citizen. Obviously,
yeah.
that's not being enforced, because we're finding out now.
Yeah, it's not. It's not.
So how long do they have to work here?
It's unenforceable. I met a man one time who had about 7 or 8 passports. He showed them all to me.
Wow. Well, you know, as far as Canada's the same way. Canada's, you know, British Commonwealth original country. You know, I still have, you know, I can still get a Canadian passport. You know, every once in a while I do, just out of curiosity. But if I want to go, because I'm once Canadian, always Canadian, I can go back to Canada anytime. I can walk into that country, you know, whether or without a Canadian passport, because I'm a Canadian citizen. You know, and so that Canada recognizes, will always recognize my Canadian citizenship. The United States will not. The United States recognizes that I'm a naturalized American. As far as the United States is concerned, I am only an American. And so it's kind of interesting. I'm sort of in this sort of dual position myself, as are all Canadians. You know, so Canadians can come to the United States. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I should be a citizen of Australia.
Well, people don't really care.
But,
yeah, people really don't care if the United States recognized the back home citizen. Now, I tell you what the goes on. People, foreigners try to vote back home. I know Africans try to vote back home, but their government won't allow them to do it.
Well, that makes
sense. Hey, Greg, let me quickly tell.
Yeah, go ahead.
Did we lose Bianchi?
No, he's still there. He's thinking.
I want to quickly tell him about dinner before I leave, because I know I'm going to have to leave here in a little bit. So
okay. So
dinner here would be, I already told you what I would do for lunch today. I'll get my conch soup. Once conch is seasoned, I get my conch soup once a week.
It's making me hungry.
Today's Friday, buddy. But,
jeez, it's making me hungry.
But for dinner now, Belizeans usually will have like a little leftover. And traditionally, they will do some flour tortillas, and they will eat that with a piece of fried fish, leftover stewed beef or pork, and then they'll cut a couple slices of cheese, and that they'll eat that beside that. If you're not having flour tortilla, then they will eat what they call journey cakes, or locally in Creole, Johnny cakes, right? Those are little like biscuits, you know, those little breakfast biscuits, kind of like that. But it's made a little differently from the biscuits, the traditional biscuits that you guys are used to. So you'll have like, you know, 2-3 of those, and you'll wash that down with a cup of tea, what have you, a glass of juice, a cup of Milo, chocolate milk, you know. That's what the Belizean will have traditionally for like supper.
Interesting. You know, the mix
sounds
of cultures
good.
Is fascinating. You've got Spanish, you've got Creole, you've got African, you've got just a bunch of different cultures all kind of thrown together in Belize. So it's fascinating, these different things. Now, when I was a kid growing up in Canada, Johnny cake was cornbread, big slap of butter on it, and maple syrup, which is really good, by the way. You should try it. Yeah. That was our Johnny cake.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, this is fun. Yeah, if you have to go, I understand, but there's no requirement. We're probably going to get on to more news and things, and of course, you're always welcome to stick around for that. Pianki, do you have any other questions for Alan? Because he may have to go soon.
No, I'm salivating at the mouth.
Well, like I say, as soon as you get over your COVID madness and stop requiring these ridiculous vaccines, this is me. I'm not criticizing you. I have problems with the government policy, but I have problems with our government policy. In fact, I was just at a rally Tuesday, and I've written two bills for the state of Florida because we have a special legislative session that the governor called for on October 29th. So DeSantis calls for the legislature to meet to ban vaccine mandates and ban mask mandates. And hopefully they're going to do that. But just to help the process, I've written two bills, which I talked about at the rally. We had this fabulous rally. Alan, did I send you the video of that? I think I did. At least I hope so. In your messenger?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay, I'll do
keep
that.
You saying you're going to send me this and send me. You're not sending me, Greg. Come on.
Okay, well, yell at me. Bug me. Either video to Alan. I'm going to make a little note for myself right now. Video to Alan.
I did get this stuff from Dr. Zelenko, though. I got those.
Okay, good. Yeah, see, we're going to keep you – see, I worry about you. You know, the fact that you've had this horrendous vaccine that we talk about all the time, the best thing you can do to prevent further injury is to go on the Zelenko, the preventive protocol. I think it's like 500 milligrams quercetin, 1,000 to 5,000 international units vitamin D3, 1,000 milligrams vitamin C, and zinc, like 50 milligrams of zinc. I do about 30 milligrams of zinc because I get zinc from other sources.
What that will do? What will that do to me? It will take that vaccine out of my system?
No. What it'll do is it'll prevent the spike proteins that your body's developing, which are actually COVID, from affecting you as much as somebody who doesn't. So the way this works, as I understand it, watch it. Well, I'll send you the video. Listen to Dr. Judy Mikovits said, because she's been on the show before, that when your body gets this messenger RNA, it's a message to your cells to create spike proteins, so that which is COVID, right? So it teaches your body to make COVID, so that your body will fight COVID. Okay, it's really kind of bizarre.
Right.
The problem is with some people, they make so much COVID that it overwhelms their immune system, because there's an immune suppressant in it. Otherwise, it would kill them. Your body would kill the messenger RNA immediately as soon as it was found in your system. Your body would destroy it, and that defeats the purpose of creating enough spike proteins so that your body can become immune to it, allegedly. Problem is, too, that the immunity wears off. I mean, it's very temporary. This is why they have, second shots and boosters. They're going to have six-month boosters all the time. There's an Israeli study that this stuff, I think it loses about 5% a week. So, 4 months, that's 20%. One month is 20%, and, 3 months is like 60%. It's down. Oh, yeah, it drops drastically. Your natural immunity is so far superior to these vaccines. It's not funny. And the vaccines have the spike proteins, which if you look at the video, which I will send you this time, Richard, I forgot his name, Dr. Richard, whatever. See, he has a video showing Pfizer vaccine entering the bloodstream. He's got electron microscope, stuff. Or maybe just regular. I don't know how big blood cells are, but maybe they're big enough for a regular microscope. Anyway, so you can see under a microscope, the red blood cells are turning white, because they're being stripped of their hemoglobin. They're stripped of their ability to transfer oxygen. So basically the red blood cells are suffocating, and then they're clumping together. This is what's going on. I hate to say this, but this is what happens in your body, especially from the Pfizer vaccine. And so the best way to counter that, because your body's making COVID, it turns out the same things that prevent COVID in us non-vaccinated folks will also slow down or reduce or get rid of many of the effects of the vaccine producing COVID in your body. So you need to go on quercetin, which is non-prescription, at least it is here, or hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. And you can look up another source.
You're looking at is just like we talk about the foreigners that come here to make money to send back home to build a big house. The same thing is going on with these pharmaceuticals experimenting and making money off of America and other people.
Yeah, that's for
sure. Americans have a very weak immune system. Why is that? Because they're so highly sanitized. They're sanitized. If you go into Belize, if you go into an African country, those people's immune system could take on King Kong because they are very strong, because they're not sanitized like the U.S.
Yeah.
People walk around with their shoes off. Many places they have troughs, like open sewers, and they inhale in that. They're in the rivers taking a bath. they have a very, very kryptonite immune system.
Yeah, but Belize is different, though. It's not like that. Belize is very, it's like if you took Europe and put it in the Caribbean, you'd have Belize. You know, it's a very, very, you know, clean place. You're talking about it's gorgeous. You know, it's a beautiful place. So it's not the same kind of thing. But I know what you mean about immune systems. I was a tour guide in San Francisco, and I have a great immune system because I was constantly exposed to people from around the world. And so,
yeah,
you know, I'd have like 30 nations on my duck tour at one time.
Wow.
You know, so I was, and I'm shaking hands with everybody, except the Muslim women didn't want to shake my hand because I'm an infidel. So that was a little bit of an issue. But other than that, everybody else did. Yeah. But I want to just, I got to give you a website.
You were hugging some of these people.
Of course, the cute babes, of course I was.
Yeah.
I'm not stupid. Yeah, so we're getting closer. Yeah, so I was keeping up foreign relations. Yeah, I was doing my part for America.
Right.
Jean's like shaking her head right now. I can tell. Anyway, but I got to give you another website, myfreedoctor.com. So you want to write that down, myfreedoctor.com. And so that's Dr. Ben, myfreedoctor.com. That's Ben Marble. And he was at the rally Tuesday in Pensacola. And so he's going to connect me with some folks. I'm going to be on Dr. Brian Artis' show. I'll be on that fairly soon. We're already working on that. And there's another doctor that wants to connect me with some other folks. And I'll mention that when he tells me I can. But those are things that are happening right now. Anyway, so myfreedoctor.com, VladimirZelenkoMD.com. And you want to start getting those preventive protocols to reduce the effects of the vaccine in your body, to break up those spike proteins, to keep your red blood cells happier and healthier, to not have blood clots in all your major organs. I am trying to scare you, and I'm not trying to scare you.
Nothing scare me anymore in this life, Greg. Nothing scare me in this life anymore. I'm going to live until I'm 99 years old, man, and I'll feel 25 still.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In that
case,
let me go for it. Go ahead, Bianchi.
Let me tell you something. If you see somebody walking your way that looks like Zuckerberg, turn around and run like hell.
You know, that's a great question. Which celebrities have you met on your tours or just travels around Belize?
You know what, Greg? I'm very upset. I'm very sad. I have never been honored to meet any celebrities.
No celebrities? I guess they take private tours.
I heard.
They take limousines.
I heard
what's
her name was here. Britney Spears was here the other day and had some bad experience and wrote some bad reviews about where she was staying. Britney Spears. I heard she was here the other day. Tom Brokaw.
Well,
she's on my dinner list.
Yeah, the Britney Spears is on my fantasy dinner list of the people I'd most want to have dinner with if I could. Yeah, I'd love to meet Britney Spears.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Tom Brokaw there? He said.
What's that?
I wonder if he had his mask on.
Who?
His what?
Tom Brokaw.
Was he there?
You know what? Tom Brokaw was here about 10 years ago, maybe less than 10 years ago. And he said he loved Belize so much because nobody was running after him. Nobody wanted no signature. Nobody knew him. He thought nobody knew him. He went to this restaurant down in Placencia. That's in the south. That's another hot tourist spot in the south, Placencia, right on the coast. And he said, when he came to the bar, he says, "Good evening, Mr. Tom. How can I help you today? How can I help you this evening? What can I get you?" And he was shocked. He said, "Well, somebody knew me here." Of course, everybody knows Tom Brokaw. But in Belize, we won't be running behind no celebrity wanting no autograph. You know, we don't bombard these people.
The thing is, in our country, I believe we have our priorities mixed up. Everybody thinks that, you know, like the actors, Hollywood people, you know, people that are, you know, musicians, whoever, that they are, you know, ball players, whatever, that they are what's important. And now they're not. Everyday people are what's important. Everyday people is what makes this country so great. And I think it's so sad that it's like, I think everybody should be celebrated and not. So you guys got it right. So kudos.
All right. Thank you, G.
You're welcome.
I like her, Greg. She's all right. She's nicely.
That's why she's a producer. You know, so you know, not everybody gets to do this show, but I picked some good people, and fortunately, they're nice enough to stick around for a while, like Pianki and Gene and some of the other folks that call. I think we've pretty much covered Belize for this week. The only other question I was what I talked about before was the economy, you know, the effect of every dollar. But I think we pretty much handled that too. We can worry about that next time. But we got a lot to talk about. Daylight saving, I'll tell you about our government thing, and you know, if you have some music you want to send me. And I'm going to check my messenger right after the show and make sure you get that video because it was interesting. I'm not used to a live studio audience in a stadium. So it's kind of fun to get up before a whole bunch of people. You know,
yeah.
This is not something I do. I mean, this is easy. I could do radio all day. But to compress everything I want to say into 5 minutes, you know, I was joking with Gene beforehand. I said, it's damn near impossible. You know, I take 10 minutes just to get warmed up. So, you know, it's a different story. All right, sir. Yeah, thanks very much. And again, if you want to call back at 7 o'clock your time, because we're on the same time next week, or if you want to move it to 6, you can always start an hour earlier. You know, either 6 or 7, they're both open right now. So whichever one you want to do, just let me know so I can tell folks ahead of time. So Pianki can get in his dinner request, and we'll reserve a couple of conks for him, and away we go.
All right. Yeah. Well, you know what? For me, Greg, 6 o'clock is perfect. 6 o'clock my time.
Okay.
You said it's the same for you, right? 6?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'll move you up for an hour.
You'll
start off
on
Friday.
So I'll log on around I'll log on for the same 6 o'clock time. That's good for me, all right? So, It was good to be on today. Thank you so much. This is Alan Dawson from Belize on Action Radio.
See, he's
Have
got
a
the
great week.
Thank you, Alan.
He's got the tagline. We need some contact information for either you, Belize, the tourist industry, your tour company, anything you want to do, Alan, before you go.
All right. Very good. And you guys have a wonderful weekend, too. And if anybody coming on a cruise ship for next week, be sure to book the tour of Belize City with Calypso Train Tours, open-air trolley.
Ooh. And do you have a website or a Facebook page?
Oh, you know what? I need to get those. I need to get those for next Friday for sure.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, look it up this week. Alan will have those next week. See, everything we do here is a work in progress, Alan, so don't worry about it. Every week improves. Thank you, sir.
There you go. Have a good weekend, everyone.
You too.
Bye-bye now.
You know, this is turning into a really fun report. You know, I mean, I've known Alan for years, but, you know, it took a while. Well, it took a long time to get the Skype line worked out. I spent several hours talking to this guy in London, and we kept trying different things, and they weren't working, and we got it all rigged up now so that the calls are immediately forwarded directly to the studio here, which makes life much, much easier. In fact, I don't even think I need my Skype chat anymore because it didn't register this. I'm just going to take that out. One less window to worry about. So how's the signal today? I've tried to cut as many windows down as possible. Are we sounding better?
Oh, man. So much better than yesterday. 100 times better. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I haven't heard you cut out once yet.
Okay. So that's it. It's the window.
Yeah. You can come through when the phone's off.
Oh. Well, that's interesting. How's that work?
I don't know. The phone is off, but I hear you talking. Jumps up and down.
Must be on your computer device or something like that. Let's take a little break now. We've got a little bit of time before Derek joins us. We'll talk economics, and then we've got a couple of folks. We've got Shirley Wattrell, who's at a gun competition, and she's going to introduce a guest, Diana Mueller from the DC Project. So we're going to talk women and guns and DC Project. Gene, you had something?
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I just got a question because I was just reading something that there is in Yemen. That on the 10th that some terrorists stormed the embassy and they kidnapped some people and took some stuff from there. Is that true or is that old news?
I'm not – talking about Myanmar or Myanmar or where? Or you say Yemen?
Yemen, yeah.
I don't know, but we can – if you want to take a – we can take a break now and you can look it up.
Yemen is there by Saudi Arabia. They've been fighting for a little while.
Yeah, okay.
Well, this North and South, I think, is having a civil war, as far as I know. But I honestly don't know, you know, after that.
The only thing I see is the U.S. State Department has confirmed that the Yemenite staffers are being detained by the terrorist and that property was stolen from the embassy.
All I can say is God help them, because we know that Brandon, who stole the White House, isn't going to do a damn thing for any Americans. He doesn't care. That's not an agenda.
No, unless they're... And that's their, anti-American thugs. Then he'll say something like, yeah, what a trip.
Yeah, unless they're illegal aliens.
Well, if they're taking hostage and you depended on Brandon, good luck.
Yeah, ain't going to happen. Yeah. And the same way Obama didn't rescue Americans either. Trump did, you know, because he believes in individual Americans. But you look at any of the groupthink Marxists, they don't care. It's the group that matters. That's why they don't care about any particular individual. All right, I'm going to play just basically the intro to Santa Rosa Volunteers. I wrote up last night on the Federalist Papers number 7. And so hopefully I'll do Anti-Federalist Papers number 7. So I should have two new ones for you next week. But it's been a busy week. So I'm going to give you the intro here, play a couple of other things, and we'll be back. And then we'll have, of course, Derek at the bottom of the hour. And we'll talk money, which is going to be fascinating this week, just with all the markets, you know, tanking, inflation's going crazy. And Brandon's done it again. And I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com, srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, arise, patriots. It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved. Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page 1. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page 1. You can dominate Google's local 3-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Hello, everyone. It's that time of year again. So here is just a friendly little message from your Action Radio revolutionaries. In preparation for Christmas and New Year's, we have just a few ideas and suggestions to make your holiday complete. Granted, these are times of adversity, brought about by bureaucrats in what we affectionately call the leftist lockdown orgasmic power trip. But don't let a completely illegal, martial law style, abdication and removal of your constitutional rights get in the way of a decent glass of eggnog with friends. After all, 6-foot social distancing is a completely false concept for a virus that can linger in the air for hours in aerosol form, can be sneezed well over 200 feet, can travel through an entire 10-story building's central air system in a couple of minutes, and goes through a mask like a mosquito through a chain-link fence. So, no matter what you do, everyone is getting exposed sometime. Leaving the healthy people alone accomplishes this in about 10 weeks. So, this should have been done the end of May. Speaking of masks, besides being a violation of your Fourth Amendment rights against seizure of your person, in this case, your face, without due process, the state can't make you wear a mask. So, go home if you're sick, but if not, go free face, as all real Americans are doing, and enjoy the Christmas season. Apparently, there is the deplorable lack of New Year's resolutions this year. Well, I have one. To resist. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to restore and rejuvenate that inner rugged individual the left has tried so hard to put behind a mask and lockdown, and I'm going to resist. So, you find a creative way to resist, there's your revolution resolution. Remember, folks, those Twilight Zone episodes where people wore masks? They were supposed to make you think, not make you copy them. Family values should be emphasized this Christmas with the traditions that bind us together. Sit as close as you can at dinner. Remember those wet kisses from Grandma when you were a kid? Engage in spirited debates. Don't forget to use serving dishes where everyone sticks their own personal fork and spoon in, all in the interest of sharing. Remind everyone that closing churches violates the First Amendment. Closing businesses without criminal convictions violates our Fifth Amendment right to life, liberty, and property. And closing schools denies our kids their right to an education. So, you may want to point that out to your governors and mayors this festive season so they understand their transgressions and can repent. I would have suggested you go to New York this year, but quite frankly, they don't have the balls to celebrate New Year's. No, really, the ball isn't dropping. Maybe we should rename Times Square Tiananmen Square West. Remember that there are many great gifts you can share this Christmas, particularly AR-15s and AK-47s. Those tend to warm the heart. As we say at Action Radio, world peace through strength. Just remember that everything the government tells you is wrong. So if you want to avoid COVID, don't take the vaccine. Go to the beach instead. Get that sunshine and vitamin D. Stay away from home. Engage in commerce and business. Travel as much as you can. Work out at crowded gyms. Drive extensively, preferably with the windows open. Patronize businesses that are in open rebellion. And resist, resist, resist the doctor dictatorship. In closing, let me just say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Hanukkah. Muslims, you don't have a holiday at this time, so just go eat Chinese food on Christmas Eve and meet some really nice Jewish folks. Hey, they might be your neighbors. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. Dangerously cool. Yeah, that's actually last year's Christmas greeting. So it was before Gene got here in Pancake. I don't know if you've heard that before, but I was in a really, really creative mood all through last year. I mean, the greater the lockdown, the angrier I got. And of course, the angrier I get, you know, the more inventive I get. So that's our Christmas greeting, which I should make that available if anybody wants to share it and turn it up one notch. I don't know if it's quite loud enough, but there we go. So welcome back. We've got Gene. We've got Pianchi. We've got about 7 minutes before Derek gets here. And we're going to talk money. Anything particularly on your minds this sum the week up? Yeah, go ahead, sir. What you got?
What's on my mind is the racism that's being directed toward Kyle Rittenhouse.
Yeah.
You got systemic racism coming from organizations like CVS that declared him a murderer even before the trial was over.
Who's CVS, a drugstore?
You got more systemic.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
The drugstore, CVS? Who are you talking about?
No, CBS, the network.
Oh, CBS, Columbia Broadcasting System. I'm sorry. It's radio. I didn't quite hear it clearly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're the racists.
You
absolutely
got the systemic racism going on.
Mm-hmm.
in the Norfolk, Virginia Police Department,
mm-hmm.
where the city manager got wind of him. The city manager is Chip Fowler, who got wind of him donating to Kyle Rittenhouse Defense Fund and the Black Chief. See how I use adjectives? The Black Police Chief, Larry mm-hmm. Boone, fired him,
yep.
saying that yep. it's not in line with the policies of the department.
Well,
now, let me ask
that,
you a question. Now, that's racism that they...
Yeah.
The police officer that was fired name is William Kelly.
Right.
And that is a racist act that they done. This is a white police officer. That is a mm-hmm. racist act that was bestowed upon him because he chose to use his free speech and also donating to Kyle Rittenhouse. They want to fire this man.
That's racist. Well, of course it's racist. Now, I'm pretty sure I saw Tucker Carlson last night. They had him on, and they talked about this. And they said that to the opposite, William Kelly, you know, he's a white guy. He donated $25 to Kyle Rittenhouse's defense, and then he was fired. He's still trying to get his job back. They're going through a grievance procedure because the police have a union. But if not, he says, we're going to have a massive lawsuit. And Tucker Carlson, he says, I hope you sue the hell out of them. But, you know, I didn't know it was a black police chief. That, you know, that's always left out of the story. But what is it about... Why would black police officers, or is it just police officers in general, why would they get all upset at Kyle Rittenhouse? He's a citizen who defended himself against a violent attack. Now, obviously, we'll go into more detail about who he is. But
they listen to the narrative. Look at mainstream media. Even now when they talk about what's going on in the courtroom, they don't tell the whole story. So people still believe that he's guilty of sin.
Of well, not
though?
Only that,
what are they
telling
charging
you that blacks are just as big as racist as white folk, as white person is, and anybody else. For some reason or another, people use this whole excuse that, well, blacks don't have power, they can't be racist. Well, that's a doggone lie. They have got power, and I can show you many, many, many cases of them being racist. Racism really has nothing to do with skin color. It's about the act that can be carried out by anyone.
Well, it's really about achieving a political objective. I call this political racism, you know, and in fact, I did when I wrote my conservative glossary, one of the big terms is political racism is a false accusation of racism to achieve a political outcome. And that's what's going on here. It's just a power trip. It's a way to achieve power over other people because white people are still way too guilty and way too weak at the knees, you know, whenever the term racism is used. So you got to kind of have to inoculate yourself against that. You know, my the fun I had was when I forgot what his name, Warren. Oh yeah, Warren calls us Black Lives Matter host who does you know Good Morning New Orleans here on Black Radio. Called me up, and I actually goaded him into calling me a racist, which is pretty funny. And then I said, okay, prove it. Of course he couldn't, right? So you can fight these people. Just because the word racism is used doesn't mean you go weak in the knees. But I want to talk about Kyle Rittenhouse for a little bit because this is a fascinating case. I think and what is it about a black police chief that would find what Kyle Rittenhouse did? Is it because he's white? Is it because he's an armed citizen? Is it because he, I don't know, maybe Christian, because he may be a traditional family person? He may believe in America first. All of the above.
They were quick to judge, listening to what they were told instead of mm-hmm. looking at the facts. I mean, we talk about the case, and this is off the beaten path, but did you see where the judge, people are like criticizing him because he kind of make a joke because he goes, when they ask about when they're breaking for lunch, when will the Asian food be there? Or is it going to take a while because it's coming or whatever with the cargo ships, whatever. He made it a kind of a joke out of it. Well, people are criticizing him because he called the food Asian.
What?
And it's
would Chinese
like,
be better?
What do you call Chinese food then? Asian food? I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what do you name it? I mean,
yeah.
So what do you call
like
Southern food?
I don't
what
know.
What do you call?
It's like, is this all they
food
have
is
to complain
food.
About and condemn and whatever? But yeah, I guess this was a big thing on social media yesterday in some circles. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh my God. But
well,
yeah,
what if
I
we called soul food black food?
Yeah,
let's
it don't
let's
make
have
any
some fun
sense.
Here.
But it's just like there's more than this one, because there's I don't know if he was the policeman that had a wife that had cancer, but then there was a firefighter on the East Coast that I think was fired too because he gave like $20. I mean, these people didn't give a whole lot of money, number one. But number two, look at Kamala when the thugs were burning down America, and she set up ways for people to donate money to help them and their cause.
Oh, bail fund, yeah.
Well,
first off, these are anonymous donations. Did somebody leak the fact that these people donated? And did they make a public list, or should have been a private list?
Yeah, somebody did leak it.
Okay.
I hope they found my name on there. I'm waiting on you. Come on over.
That's interesting.
And
so,
here's another thing, Gene. Tell them about George Floyd's cousin. You hear about that? George Floyd's cousin made a statement that on YouTube telling the jurors that there's people in the courtroom that's photographing them.
Oh, in which courtroom? In the Cal Rittenhouse courtroom?
That's intimidation. That's intimidating the jury. Where's the FBI?
Now, does the judge know this? Because this judge sounds like he's pretty good. He's really on top of things. And he's actually a liberal. I mean, he's a Democrat appointee. You know, but he believes in the Constitution. He believes in America. And he believes in the justice system. And so as the best of the classic liberal person, you know, he's as much for the Constitution as any conservative is. And so it's just he may have different views on government policy, but what he's doing in the trial is absolutely correct. I post some of the things the judge has said. They're YouTubes about, you know, sections of the trial. So I've already posted. I've been listening to the judge. And what looks like to me is the prosecutor, and I heard, I think it was Dan Bongino was talking about this yesterday too, that the prosecutor is trying to get a mistrial because he doesn't want to lose. He's more concerned with his personal career.
Yeah, how can they get a mistrial? I don't know. I don't know enough about the judicial system. What's the difference between a mistrial and the defense asking for just a whole new trial?
Well, there's several things you can do. This is where we need Jonathan Mosley, who should be back Thursday next week to go through it. If the defense asks for a verdict, they call it a summary judgment. In other words, the prosecution screwed up. There's not enough evidence. There's no point in sending it to a jury. This is a waste of time. It can happen before a trial, during a trial. It may even happen after a trial, but I wouldn't think as much because once you've already done it, you might as well go to the jury. But a summary judgment is where the judge says, yep, defendant's free to go. No evidence. Or lack of enough evidence to get even close to reasonable doubt or beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, and that's what
that.
This should be.
Well, it should.
You have to dismiss it with prejudice.
Well, all right,
you can't bring
it
back again.
I'm getting to that. Yeah, you're exactly right. So what the prosecutors are doing is what's called prosecutorial misconduct. And anytime the prosecutor screws up, if they don't give all the evidence that they have, in other words, if they withhold evidence, say they had the videotapes themselves instead of the person that did it, the journalist who gave it to both sides, the defense and the prosecutors. If it was only given to the prosecutors, I guarantee they would withhold it. That's called exculpatory evidence. In other words, it allows it's the evidence that proves the defendant is innocent. Right. And so if the prosecutor withholds that, it's called prosecutorial misconduct. What the prosecutor is doing also is prosecutorial misconduct, willfully bringing things into the trial that they're not allowed to do. And so when he accuses Kyle Rittenhouse of, his silence as an admission of guilt. So we didn't talk to police. So obviously you might be hiding something. You must be guilty. They can't say that. That's grounds for what they call a mistrial. So mistrial is where basically the trial is set aside and they can do it with prejudice or without prejudice. And I think if it's with prejudice, then they can refile. The prosecution can refile the case and they can try it again, hopefully with a different judge if they get what they want or different venue or who knows. I think it's without prejudice. That means you can't have another trial. So there is no trial. The verdict is a mistrial as opposed to the verdict being not guilty. Now, it's much better to have a verdict of not guilty because then the prosecutor loses. And it goes on their record that they lost the biggest case of their career. You know, so
well,
everybody
this
realizes,
prosecutor, he shouldn't even be a lawyer. I mean, he acts like a child.
See, that's the other thing, too. Now, is he doing it intentionally?
And he has immunity, too.
Well, yes and
the
no.
Thing is,
I mean, he can still be disbarred after this.
I don't know why you'd want to act like that when everybody, you know, not everybody, but the nation is watching for the most part. Some of the stuff he says and does, it's like incompetence.
But that's the point. In other words, it's an incompetent prosecution, so it gets a mistrial.
But the thing is, it shouldn't, because number one, they chose the prosecution. You know, that's mm-hmm. who they have. And number two, when you look at the prosecution and the witnesses they put on their stand, they didn't work for them. I mean, they helped Kyle out. I mean, when the thug that was shot.
Yeah, like Rosenblum.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, holy cow. And just when the one guy said basically that whoever the police or whoever, I don't know who it was trying to tell him, well, do you want to change what you said? And it's like, you know, and he's like, oh, well, you took it the wrong way. And the person on the stand said, no, I didn't. That's what they said. Yes, it's going to be interesting. Regardless what happens, there's going to be riots if he gets found not guilty, because people are already upset about the whole thing. And
that's got nothing to do with the trial. And this is where I think this judge is going to, you know, I mean, if
you
riots determine trials. Yeah, go ahead, Bianchi.
You got Brandon calling him a white supremacist, and everyone he shot was white. I keep telling you, this thing is all screwed up. Gene, you talk about blacks doing it because of what they hear. No, there's an inert hate for whites in a lot of these people. How it got there, it wasn't any one particular way. Some of it was nurtured through lectures and what they heard or what they read, which many cases of the time is being lopsided and false. It's an inert hate. Here to tell you, that is what it is.
It's just sad, just so sad. And, yeah, I don't understand.
It's preventable, too. It's preventable,
well,
you know. And,
the
idea.
If they would have had the police officers there that day. Now, I'm not defending him by any means, because he, you know, a 17-year-old shouldn't be, you know, trying to enforce safety and stuff like that. But the thing is, if the cops would have been there managing the streets, not allowing this to happen, getting the thugs off the streets. But no, they allowed it, just like Minneapolis with George Floyd. They allowed looting. They allowed things to be burnt down. It's like, why is it okay for those people to act like that, but then other people are not? And then, yeah, I hope when this is all said and done, I hope he sues Biden, because Biden wasn't president yet, or I can't even say he's president now, but, you know, he wasn't doing what he's doing now. And it's like, you know, when we say something, our words do have consequences. And it's like, if you know,
CBS should be sued.
Yeah, I think a lot of people should be sued, but yeah, definitely think Biden should be sued.
And, you know, here's another thing, too. Yes, he had a right to be there. Citizens got a right to do what the police and the authorities who was paid to do are not doing it. And he had a right to be in that town because he worked there. He worked there as a lifeguard and doing other things.
Right.
He had a right to perform the training that the Red Cross gave him in times of emergency and rendering medical assistance to those that need it. Now, I guess we supposed to boycott the Red Cross because they taught him how to do those things.
I'm just listening to you too, so don't confuse the silence to ending being wrong. This is a great discussion. Derek
I get
may
exactly
not be able to make
what
it,
you're
so
saying. I get exactly what you're saying, but it's so sad. It's so sad. And you know, I don't want to say anything about the guys that got killed. They were thugs. I mean, but the whole thing is sad, very sad. I mean, what he's going through, you know, in his life, I got to say, hopefully when this is all said and done, he's going to be able to, I hope that he picks things up and makes the rest of his life positive, because even like yesterday, they were trying to put the prosecution, I don't know if you heard, was trying to put something or pictures of him after he was, got out of jail, of him wearing a shirt with some, it wasn't a very good shirt, but basically something about, I don't even know, just about getting out or whatever. And the judge wouldn't allow it. But, you know, realistically, I mean, that was poor judgment too. And like the judge said, you know, we all show poor judgment at times, but I hope he can use this, what he's gone through, and that helps him grow and really doesn't turn him bitter, doesn't, you know, just really makes him watch what he does to help people, continue to help people, and not go the opposite extreme. But I hope.
And it sounds like you think he did something wrong, you know, and what he did was.
What he tried
know,
to say.
Okay, go ahead.
He was in a tap drinking a beer, and they tried to say that it was against the law for him to do that. But no, his mom was there, which complies with Wisconsin's law.
Right, right. Yeah, it's the whole, I mean, the thing is, they want to pick apart everything that he does. But the bottom line is this, it's like, I just hope justice is served. And I don't know, it's as I said, the mainstream media is still spewing, you know, that how guilty he is and all this other stuff. And I saw it myself the other day with headlines, because the headline said something that they totally took it out of context, and it's insane that they're allowed to do it. Just insane. I hope, and I'm not one to sue, but I hope he sues everyone that was involved with this in a negative way, because people really do have to start being accountable. If he has to be accountable, put through the mud, and like they said, he shouldn't have even gone to trial. It shouldn't have even gone to trial. When you look at the videotapes, he was acting in self-defense.
Well, yeah.
And then you have people like LeBron James, the foot basketball player for the Los Angeles Lakers, come saying that he had fake tears, fake crocodile tears or something to that nature. But let me ask you something. LeBron James, when you said that people vandalized your place at your home and wrote the word nigger on the outside of it, was that fake? Come on now, was that fake?
Yeah, the thing is, regardless if it was fake or not, we don't know. He's, you know, he's the only one that knows. And to me, I mean, if I don't know. I don't know. It's just crazy. If I'd be put on stand and reliving that, the thing is, I mean, I would assume based on what I saw in the videos that he was afraid of his life. I mean, if someone comes at you with a skateboard and it puts it over your head or towards your head, you know, it's like the, who said it? I forget who it was. Once someone on the mainstream media said a skateboard, you know, but it can be. I mean, if some people are killed with a baseball bat, a skateboard is just as lethal. You hit them right. I mean, then he was attacked from behind with a rocks and stuff. It's like, you know, I don't know.
Well, I think when he was at the police station to be deposed, he was vomiting.
Yeah.
And that's the signs of a concussion.
Right. And I was wondering, too, if they got him medical attention or encouraged him to get medical attention. It's just really sad. He is a good case, an excellent case on people needing to know the facts before we are quick to judge. And I can't say I'm good at that, because, you know, I definitely sometimes don't look at all the facts. But I think we need to be better at that. We need to be better at that. And also we need to be better at, okay, if we make a mistake and are quick to judge, apologize after, or when you know that you were wrong.
Well, wait a minute. I want to get in here for a second, because it seems like you think that Kyle Rittenhouse did something wrong. I mean, he went there. Yes, he had an AR-15, and yes, I think he wanted to do what the police weren't doing and be part of a civilian, you know, deterrent to potential crime. And then he becomes this huge victim where they try to kill him. And he, you know, he defended himself. So he didn't actually do anything wrong. In fact, I mean, everything is fully self-defense, and it comes under that, and that's going to be proven in the trial. But I think, Gene, you think he did something wrong. Was it
no,
the fact that he was carrying a
all.
Gun? Or
never.
Okay.
Never.
Well, I get that impression that maybe I misheard
not at
you.
All.
Okay. All right.
No, I'm just saying that people are quick to judge, and I am quick to judge. I'm not saying I was quick to judge in this case, because to be honest with you, I heard about it, but I did not pay attention to it, because a lot of things, believe it or not, mm-hmm. I got a lot more going on in my life than watching all the news. And sometimes I need to unplug because I try to stay at a more, how would you say, positive energy level. And
right.
sometimes with the news, it can bring me down very fast. But no, uh-uh. No, I'm just saying, him to be his age, I you know, if I'd have been his mother, I would have questioned him being there that night. But, you know, I don't know him. But he was there. And I'm not saying he wasn't there for the right reasons. No, because like Bianchi said, you know, he had the CPR. He had the medics, the training. And when he knew that, because I wasn't there. Kenosha, I wasn't there. I had no idea what was going on. So he knew what was happening in the streets. He was there for, you know, for what he believed is the right reasons. I ain't going to say right, wrong, whatever. But I'm just saying a lot of people in the mainstream media, and Biden included, and a lot of people were quick to judge and hang him. And it's like, we need to wait till the facts are out. Because if it wouldn't be for those videotapes, I mean, even the guy that got shot in the bicep and said that basically he had a gun pointing to Kyle. And if these other videotapes wouldn't have came out, would that guy have been honest? We don't know. I mean, you could say, well, he was under oath. Well, we look at all the people in the government that have been under oath, lied, and nothing happens to them. But with all the videotapes coming out, there's proof that he was self-defense.
Yeah, the FBI withheld drone footage that showed what he was, the danger that he was being projected with. The FBI withheld the tapes.
Yeah, so right there. I mean, right there, that is awful. Because realistically, as I said, it shouldn't have got to this point by just looking at the videos. I mean, if the prosecution doesn't even have a witness that can testify that says that Kyle did it just to kill someone, that was his intent and purpose was to kill someone. No, everybody they put on the witness stand was actually, or at least the prosecution, actually helped Kyle's case out for innocence.
Yeah, Rosenblum said he pointed his gun at Kyle first. Kyle
right.
raised his gun. Rosenblum lowered his gun. Kyle lowered his gun. If the man was there, if the young man was there with a deceitful mind intent on doing danger and harming people, he could have killed him then, which eventually he did shoot him. But you had another case. When he stumbled and fell, you had a black man in white pants run up and try to stomp him. He rolled over to avoid that big foot, and the black man turned and was running away. Kyle could have shot him in the back, but at that point, he wasn't a threat any longer.
Right. And they also had, if he was, his intent and purpose was to kill people, why did he go there that earlier that day and help clean graffiti off the school?
You yeah. folks know much more about the case than I do.
It's just a very, very sad situation that,
well,
you know, and that's why I say I hope that he doesn't get bitter over what happened, because I tell you, his life has totally changed. And like they said, people say it's ruined. I don't think it's ruined. I think, and I don't know. I don't know what he wanted to do, what his dreams about life were. Who knows if those things may change. But, I mean, to think that even with his law, I mean, at law, the people that were defending him, I get, and I don't know enough about this, but there was a big stink about that too initially. But can you imagine people that went to defend him, the lawyers? I mean, mm-hmm. most people think lawyers are kind of scummy anyway. But it's like when you're working with the defendant, and everybody thinks, well, not everybody, because his, you know, he had, I think, good family support and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. when majority of the public that you don't even know, and you turn on the TV and that's all you hear is, you know, what a horrible person he was. And then it's like, then you find a lawyer that's going to represent you. You know, how many people really get the best of the best lawyers in their area to be, you know, to defend them? Not a whole lot.
Well, a trial like this that's got so much public attention is going to get a lot of lawyers coming to it, but you got to make sure you have the right ones. And he's got some really good lawyers. I mean, they're
now
asking the
does,
right questions.
Yeah,
yeah
the
well.
The way it sounded at first, I don't know what all went on with those lawyers, but I know, what's his name? Oh, gosh. Oh, man, the person on Linwood. Linwood was in the he got condemned a lot because supposedly he, I don't know if he helped with a fund or did something to help with, letting people know about a defense fund that was set up in for Kyle.
Well, I tell you what, in these last couple of years, I have contributed more money to causes like this than you ever would have imagined. You know, conservatives don't have a George Soros and a devious Zuckerberg to help them in cases like this. But you just got to look, I'm for liberty. I love the United States. I love the U.S. Constitution. And I'm going to continue to fight for it to the very last breath in my body, Greg.
Amen.
Well, that's what we're all here for. But, you know, I look at this case, and I'm wondering if was Kyle Rittenhouse part of a group of other civilians that banded together because the police had completely abdicated because they didn't want their town destroyed? I mean, that's what I understand. I don't know if he was with another group, but I understand that's what his goal was, you know, because most people don't show up. I mean, the reason to bring an AK-47 to a riot, obviously you wanted to help stop it or you want to protect yourself. Or you're just displaying the fact that you have a right to open carry firearms. And I think some of the folks, I forget where it was it Michigan? Was it Detroit where they were doing that during the elector controversies where they were putting Biden electors and they were trying to, what they should have been doing is having Trump electors gone. I think there's one place in particular where the Trump electors were barred from it by the police. Police are becoming the enforcement arm of whichever, of the Marxists in power, of the deep state. And it's really getting
right.
bad. The fact that the FBI withheld evidence is exactly why this journalist had to release it to the defense people. That's exculpatory evidence. In other words, the fact that the FBI did that, anybody who did withhold evidence from that trial needs to be booted from the FBI, their pension gone, and they need to be arrested for withholding evidence at a trial. You know, and so these are serious crimes. Those that commit perjury, government officials particularly, need to be arrested and thrown in jail. You know, they're not paying. There's no accountability for deep state crimes. You know, Biden himself, Mr. You know, Brandon, the fact that he said Kyle was a white supremacist, that should have caused a mistrial right there. You know, because you're never going to get an unprejudiced juror.
Right.
Wasn't Rosenblum a felon and an abuser of a pedophile?
Oh, yeah, apparently he's a
rapist,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah,
He's got a terrible record, yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, one of them was just let out of what was it? Psychiatric. He was detained in prison, and he just got out earlier that day. And it was a
and he posted. He posted to Kyle, "If I catch you alone, I'm going to kill you."
Yes. Yeah.
Now,
so,
was that before the, or during the thing, or was that before it? I mean,
before. While it was going on, it was going on.
Did that get shared with law enforcement at all? I'm just curious. If I get death threats like that,
well, they should know it.
I'm going to make it known.
If me and Dean know it, we'll be the last one to know it.
Yeah, it was, they're aware of that. Yeah, because that was brought up in court.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just really sad, And then the prosecutor, as I said, I can't believe they'd have such an inept prosecutor. But then I can see why as I said, this shouldn't have even gotten to trial because of the videotapes and what it shows, that he acted in self-defense. And that's all they would have needed to say.
No, you're missing the point of the trial. You're missing
the
point of the trial from the deep state.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, you could have put a kid behind bars for years or maybe for life. And why? He was just defending himself. And the scary thing is, what I always think when these things happen, it's like, okay, maybe you're not going to riot. Maybe you're not going to go when there's a riot and try to protect your city. But what happens if there's a riot and you protect your house or you protect your business? What happened to that couple in, where was it, St. Louis? I forget where it was, where they stood outside with their gun. And people,
yeah, they're running for office, by the way.
Those two lawyers.
The McCloskeys.
Yeah.
McCloskeys are running for office, yeah.
I mean, so what this is showing us is you can't defend yourself. We have to let the thugs take whatever they want. No, it's like
No. Wait.
We
Gene,
don't.
Hold on a second. Gene, let me just stop you for a bit because I want to make this – you got to understand who's on trial here. Kyle Rittenhouse, yes, obviously he's on trial. But you know who's really on trial? White, male, Christian, patriotic gun owners who defend themselves. That's who's on trial here. This is a symbolic trial. This is as much a trial, as the McCloskeys could be there. You know, you notice the Koreans in the Rodney King riots, you know, the Koreans who defended Koreatown with SKS and AK-47 rifles, never went to trial. All right. So, but if there are white store owners, they might have. This is about the deep state trying to prosecute white people and demonize white male gun owners. You know, it's like when Josh Hawley talks about masculinity, you know, when he says we've got a crisis of you know, people trying to call toxic masculinity and reduce men down to, you know, girly men wimps. This is what's going on. So this is much more than Kyle. This is propaganda trial. This is a star trial. This is a trial to make, you know, to make an example of him saying white men don't take up guns because this is going to happen to you. This is a gun control trial as much as anything else. So there's a lot of things going on here. When you look at it that way, it you know, it makes a lot of sense from the deep state point of view as to what they're trying to accomplish. Now, the fact that the prosecutor is incompetent is not, he's not really incompetent. He's got a strategy. Now, the question is whether that strategy is going to work, because this guy's been, has done a bunch of trials from what I understand. You know, he's a well-known, you know, very effective prosecutor. So why would a well-known, very effective prosecutor make mistakes that, you know, a first-year law student wouldn't make? Well, obviously it's by design. Well, why is it by design? Well, because he wants a mistrial rather than a not guilty verdict. Well, why does he want that? Well, is it his career? Is it the fact that he's got pressure from all those folks above him saying you better win this case, you know, or you know, your ass is toast. You know, we don't know what's going on, you know, behind the scenes, but I'm sure he's under a huge amount of pressure to win this case, and he's not going to, because the evidence is against him, and the FBI tried to help him by withholding evidence. You know, so this is a white trial. This is what this is.
It was a powerful picture when they showed the prosecutor with his head in his hands after the one witness basically said that, yeah, he pointed the gun at Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
Before
well,
Kyle
he had to,
shot
otherwise
him.
He'd be guilty of perjury, and he's not stupid.
Right.
You know, so now is he being arrested for that?
No, well, he is stupid when he went in and don't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
It's somewhat a dynamic here. You know, a mistrial, if they had another trial, they'd have more blacks on the jury. You know, now I see why come who's on the jury is very important, because you got so much bias what? That's coming out of a segment of the population there that's in that town.
But
you
know, too,
wait, Pianchi, where does the bias come from? Is it because Kyle Rittenhouse is being labeled a white supremacist? Is that why black people might hate him? You know, or is it because he, you know, defended himself? What's the objection to Kyle Rittenhouse from black people? Why they got against him?
Well, it's not all black people, but it's certain segments of the population in certain areas where you would know to look for it. You got to know what to look for. I'm going to have to take you by the hand and lead you around some of these places. Hopefully we come out alive.
Yeah, give me a St. Louis tour. That'd be kind of fun. You know, but no, seriously, hang on. Let me get my question here. But this is what I'm trying to understand.
Are
black folks objecting to him because he's white, because he was a gun owner, because he defended himself?
Have you ever listened to any of Reverend Wright's sermons?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've been forced to listen to part of them. But yeah, tell me.
Well, then that's where a lot of that began. You got a whole congregation there. And he takes the Bible off to a whole different perspective.
Yeah, black liberation
theology.
And that's
where it begins. That's one place. There's other places, too.
That's
why they want critical race theory. They want critical race theory to be directed toward white children. So they would grow up hating themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And how sad is that? Nobody has control over their skin color. It's what we're born with. Very sad. But one thing about this case, too, is the jurors. People were taking photos of them leaving, and supposedly they weren't sequestered so they could go home. But these jurors, if you really think about it, you get, I don't want to say stuck, but you get put on a case like this, and it's scary to think that their life could be in danger after this, too, for how they vote. Not even their life, but their livelihood.
And then, too, now here's another thing, Dean and Greg. You got George Floyd's brother, a cousin. Now, Kyle didn't shoot a black man. Every person he shot was white. White male, a representative of white supremacy, white racism. So why is... Where does this animosity and hate start, and where does it end? Apparently, it doesn't end in any damn place.
This is what I was trying to figure out. You know, where would the black police chief of Norfolk get, you know, fire a white police officer who contributed to his defense allegedly? Well, he contributed anonymously, and obviously was found out. You know, but what's the objection to him? I think it's more the fact that he's a gun owner.
He contributed to the defense of a white male that shot in self-defense another white male. Now, you look at all the different dynamics that's going on here. Mm-hmm. That's why it's confusing, but it's well planned.
True. Yeah.
What's the objective then?
Under normal circumstances, these type of dynamics that you are witnessing, you got black on black, you got white on white, you got blacks accusing whites. Whites ain't doing anything but sitting there taking it. These are different dynamics that's all been planned. It's no way in the world, even at a crap table, you could not throw this type of pattern. No matter how many attempts you try.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a fascinating thing because we keep reducing it to skin color, but you've got white Antifa that can commit all the crimes in the world, and a white Kyle Rittenhouse is on trial for his life. You had, the accusations of white supremacy. You've got this guy, I can post this on my Facebook page. Let's see if I can get the two names. You got Kyle, let's see if I can pull this up real quickly here. Scroll.
Hold on a second here.
So the post is, you know, you have Kyle Rittenhouse shoots three criminals in self-defense, bail set at $2 million, harassed by state prosecutors and the news media to this day. And the next panel is Timothy Simpkins, brings a gun to school, shoots four people, including a teacher, bail set at $25,000, released the next day, and he's black. So this is about, I think, just it's a conspiracy to destroy, I guess, you know, it's all this it's like a white oppression. It's like you're white, you're guilty, you're going to get longer sentences, you're going to be prosecuted more, don't even think of taking up guns, don't even think of resisting. And why the deep state thinks that black people won't resist the deep state, which is happening, and white people are the only ones who are,
they do.
Is kind of strange. Well, so there's a misperception. And I got my two guests listening. We got Shirley and Diana are on the line right now. I want to kind of give them a little flavor for what we do here before bringing them on. But, it's not as simple as black and white.
There are blacks out there but you never will hear. You know, black conservatives get crucified. They don't get castigated. Well, I guess they do too.
Well, that's because
they
white.
Get crucified.
Very
and
true.
See, here's the difference between Kyle and Simpson.
Right.
Simpson was charged with aggravated assault. He went and got a gun and came back and shot four people?
Yeah, including
Kyle is being practically charged with murder. And he was in self-defense all the way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The difference between Kyle is a white male, and Simpson is a black young male.
So the Easter of the deep state,
though. In Chicago,
though,
you don't have blacks shoot other blacks at the tune of 2,000, over 2,500 in 160 days.
Right.
160 days, 2,500 and counting.
Yeah, I'm going to hold you up here. I'm going to bring in my two guests. We're going to switch over a little bit here. In fact, I'm just giving a quick round of applause. It's a busy day on Action Radio. We never did get our chat with Derek. Unfortunately, he couldn't join us, so we'll have to pick up our economic report next week. This is kind of a cool situation. I have our past guest, bringing on a guest. So it was a very interesting situation. So I'm going to kind of turn it over to Shirley here. Shirley Wachell, who was on last week with Jim Dykes. This is Jim's Second Amendment report time. He's not able to be with us either. And we have Diana Mueller, who I have not met yet, so I'm kind of curious about. Shirley, you want to, in fact, you can pick up on what we're talking about. I'm sure we're going to get in the Rittenhouse trial, so feel free. But if you want to introduce yourself again and introduce Diana and what's going on at your shooting competition, it's time we talk guns for a bit.
Okay.
Good morning.
Hi, Greg. Hi, everybody. Good morning.
Good morning, Shirley.
Oh, Diana, you're there too?
Good morning, Diana.
I'm here. Good morning, guys.
There we go. Got you both.
Okay. Well, just so that, like Greg said, I was on, was it last week? It's been a whole week.
Time flies. Yeah, isn't it quick, though?
Yeah,
and here you are back again.
I am. See, I had so much fun, I had to come back.
Absolutely.
But, I am a Florida State Director for DC Project. DC Project, is for anyone that wasn't with us last week, is a nationwide organization of women, and we're fighting to secure our Second Amendment. And I am a author of Heels to Holster. I'm a survivor of domestic violence. And so the Second Amendment is very important to me, and that's why I have gone forward with becoming part of DC Project. And Diana and I are both at this event called Epic Shoot. It's sponsored by Big Daddy Unlimited. We're in Savannah, Georgia. And we're just having a cool time here, meeting a lot of interesting people, a lot of people on social media. And today what we're going to talk about is a little bit about Diana. First of all, she's a retired law enforcement officer from Tulsa. She's the founder of DC Project. She's the founder of Ambassador Academy. And I've gone to that a couple times, and that's where you learn to handle hostile interviews as well as friendly interviews. You learn about social media and how to promote your sponsors if you're a sponsored shooter. And she's also a professional free gunner. And on her, I don't know what she does on her free time because I don't know where she finds any of it. But also...
Well, her work sounds kind of fun, so I would think that, if you can make your work your passion, you don't need free time. My free time is action radio, 60, 70, 80 hours a week. What's that now?
You never work a day in your life if you do what you love.
That's what they say. Yeah.
And now to add to that, she is also in a music video called Let's Talk About Heroes with Brian Weaver. Go ahead and tell us about that.
Well, thanks, Shirley. I don't even need to be here. You're doing a fantastic
yes,
job.
Yes, you do.
Ryan Weaver is he's a veteran. He released a song on Veterans Day. He's an amazing human that served 21 years in our military, and then he got out and pursued a career in country music, and he has very patriotic music. He's a two-time Gold Star family member, losing his brother and his brother-in-law in combat. So you can imagine that the patriotism runs deep in his blood. And he released a new video and song yesterday honoring the heroes of the world, the military and the first responders. And I was blessed to be a part of the production and was in the music video. So it was my acting debut, kind of, so to speak.
Ooh, you're
and,
a star. I didn't
amazing.
Know we had a star. Shirley, you didn't tell me we had a star on the show.
So
I should have warned you.
Anybody,
yeah, true.
Anybody listening can look at the video on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and put in Let's Talk About Heroes, and it'll come up. And it's an amazing story, but the music video was pretty special, too, because we had – you'll see Don Jenkins is my fake dad, and he is a Medal of Honor recipient whose part of his story was used in Forrest Gump. So he's a real hero. The bugler in the video is named Rudy Pearson, and he's a decorated tunnel rat. And then the woman who comes in to get me in the shop, I'm the cop, and the woman who comes in to get me at the cafe is Jessica Lynch, Private Jessica Lynch of the rescued POW in 2003.
I know about her story. Yeah.
So to be on set with these people and to get their firsthand stories of their life events that have thrust them into popularity was amazing. And so I just encourage everybody to check it out. And a little side note, Facebook yesterday on Veterans Day would not let Ryan promote or advertise that video, saying that it went against community standards.
Of course, patriotism always goes against their community standards.
Exactly,
everything American,
exactly.
In big tech land.
So
yeah.
Share the hell out of that video, that YouTube link, and let's mm-hmm. and buy the song on iTunes. Let's Talk About Heroes on iTunes and try to help him get the word, because this patriotism doesn't go well with mainstream media.
Isn't that fascinating? You would think that even just being objective, they should at least report on things like this. But they're so far into the deep state, the government, corporate, media complex is pretty horrendous. I've got the video. I sort of owe you an apology because I listened to it, because most videos, have all kinds of crazy pictures. They're not as relevant. They're not relevant to a lot of anything. And so I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, wow, what a great song. I'm getting ready for the show this morning and doing all kinds of stuff. But and as I'm looking at little bits of it, I'm thinking, Where's Diana? I know she's here somewhere, but I've never met you. I haven't seen you, so I don't know. So I'll have to go back and check it out. It's on my Facebook page if anybody wants to go to it. That is public. I do make occasional videos public. That video is public, the one where I was in. Tuesday, we had a huge rally here in Pensacola for medical freedom. And so we had some just amazing, we had Dr. Artis, Dr. Thorpe, Dr. A couple of other folks, Ben Marble. And it was just, so, you know, we're all activists here in different ways. It's quite fascinating. But anyway, I want to hear about more of your stuff. So if you have more on the video, feel free. More on the shooting competition or more on the DC project, you know, wherever you two want to go. And of course, Gene, if you have questions, feel free to Gene's our producer. So feel free to leap right in this as well. Yeah. Neat stuff. Shirley?
I was going to say the really cool part, like that video is the cast are heroes themselves. And that just brings it to heart, you know, anytime.
Well, you know, I
want
to talk to them all on the show. Diana, I want them all on the show. Diana, you know, I'm going to ask you to bring them on, you know, week by week. We just pick one and we'll just kind of feature
them.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Shirley, you know, every month, we can bring Diana on too, or we have extra time, you know, for you guys. I'll just schedule some time. I want to meet these people, you know, and you know, first of all, I meet them just because I'm curious, because I love to meet people like this. But secondly, because, you know, there are folks that, you know, ultimately the mission of our show here, and this is something I want to talk to you about too, is citizen legislation. You know, people are always asking, what can I do? Well, this whole show is dedicated to what you can do. And what you can do is read our bills, share our bills, help write our bills, you know, take them to various legislatures. And with you guys, with the DC projects, you know, Congress. And so if you're interested at all in taking some of the gun bills, I sent them to Shirley. I don't know if you're able to get them to Diana in time to take a look, but we've got like 5 or 6 really strong gun bills. Everything from tax credits and deductions for purchases on guns and ammunition, so lower income folks can have, as the liberals say, access to quality firearms and ammunition, to some other Second Amendment things. And it's just, there's a bunch of stuff we're doing here, Second Amendment related, because that's such an important right, and it's being gone after so heavily by the deep state, who wants us all powerless victims. And, you know, don't ever be a Kyle Rittenhouse. Don't ever defend yourself. You know, it's better to die, you know, dishonorably and wastefully and just, you know, as a victim to live, you know, as someone who actually exercised the rights that God gave you. And it's a very strong message that's going out there. Don't defend yourself. Don't protect yourself.
Yeah.
You know, don't carry a gun. Don't do anything that's going to upset the, you know, the people who might be offended by your actions, you know, the deep state armies, which are, you know, Black Lives Matter and Antifa and various other groups that they're using to try and oppress the rest of us. That's quite a mouthful. So
yeah,
I'll turn it back to you guys. Yeah.
Go ahead, Shirley.
I was just going to say, you brought up a good point. Your question was, what can I do? And whenever you brought that up, it went right to the heart of how DC Project got started and Diana's story. And I'd like you to share that, Diana, because basically that's how it all started. Right? You asked that.
Right.
Absolutely. So
I was
that.
A police officer in Tulsa, Oklahoma for 22 years. I had planned on staying for 25. And,
congratulations for that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. But I left early because I was starting this second career of being a professional shooter. And one time we were on the East Coast, 2015, we were on the East Coast with Jerry Michalik and his daughter, Lena. He's kind of like the Michael Jordan of the shooting sports. And we were just being tourists. We travel around a lot, and we like to do touristy stuff in the areas that, you know, the shooting sports takes us to. And we just happened to be close enough to D.C. that a friend of mine said, do you want to meet your legislator? And I was totally apathetic. This is 2015. Totally apathetic. I was not plugged in. I was I didn't pay any attention to politics. And it was during that meeting the light bulb went off, and I think God really put it on my heart to do something. And I asked him, I said, is there something that we should be doing as professional shooters to educate the people in this building who are making some really horrendous decisions about our constitutional rights when it comes to guns? And it was from there that I realized that, you know, I only had standing in one state, so I'd need people from all over, all 50 states. And then I realized that women really have a stronger voice when it comes to speaking about the Second Amendment because we break that stereotype. So I started gathering one woman for every state. And I didn't want to do an organization. You know, I was very much keeping a lid on it and trying to hurt as few cats as possible. And we go to Washington, D.C. once a year and meet our legislators as gun owners. But 2019 rolls around and you see Virginia fall to an all anti-gun legislation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were
watching
that.
Holy cow, the fight is in the States. So I asked those women who had been coming to Washington, D.C. to go back to their home states and do the same thing, you know, shepherd, recruit women to go to the state capitals and meet your state legislators. And so now we're a full-fledged nationwide organization, and we are really positioned to be a countervisual and a countervoice to Moms Demand Action. If you know who they are, sure, red shirt, they are totally anti-gun. They are Bloomberg-funded. They say they are grassroots, but they are really AstroTurf. They are, you know, I think a lot of them would, if they heard the truth, if they heard us speak, if they understood where we stood on this issue, that we could take half of their membership. But, you know, nobody's really been pushing back against their lies and their misconceptions when it comes to gun owners and gun ownership. So we're just proud to be able to stand up and provide that pushback. You know, women can push back against women and it not be misogynist or whatever kind of word they're going to call you.
Now, this is fascinating. Because I think you hit on something that we haven't really talked about yet. This is the use of women in political issues for a different, like I say, breaking a stereotype. You know, if Billy Bob in the camo, you know, jacket and cowboy hat, you know, drives up in his pickup truck and says, "I'm representing Americans," you know, and of course, you know, women in suburbia are going to go, "Well, I don't think you recognize, you know, I don't think you represent me, pal," you know, and it's the use of women I find fascinating, the psychological use. Bloomberg picked women because moms, I mean, you can't victimize moms. And of course, now you come along and say, "Wait a minute, we don't want to be victims. We're just as powerful as anybody in society. Why can't we arm ourselves, exercise our God-given rights? We all have the same God-given rights. Men and women have the same rights. What's going on here?" You know, it's like feminism you use properly, which is a fascinating thing, was the left is trying to take away your guns, you know, and yet they talk about being feminist. I don't know if you use that angle at all, but this is a fascinating, psychological. I was looking for I like to go deep into the meanings of everything here, but the use of women, it's probably the wrong word. I'm trying to think, but women that are advocating, you know, against gun ownership that are sponsored by, you know, Marxist Bloomberg, as opposed to you folks who are doing the right thing, that are advocating individual rights, empowerment, and the ability to defend yourself. You know, you can't be free unless you have the implements of your freedom. And I wrote a piece on that earlier. I'll drag it out. Go ahead. Yeah.
One of our, we believe that education is the key to safety, not legislation. Education, not legislation. But we also know that we are our own first responders. I mean, I was a police officer for 22 years. I know exactly how long it takes for me to get from point A to point B after I received the call. I mean, sometimes if you call 911, it takes forever for them to answer the phone, let alone for a police officer to arrive. And then couple that with the defund the police movement. And I think it was the Boston new mayor was still advocating against police being in schools when their principal just got the snot beat out of them. And I'm just, you know, that's why I believe we stand in the truth. And the Rittenhouse trial is definitely going to be a landmark type case. I know it's not a Supreme Court thing, but we hear that in the Supreme Court cases as a landmark case. But Kyle Rittenhouse is obviously using self-defense. I felt that way from the beginning, but you don't ever really want to come out if you don't know all of the scenario, all of the evidence. But I felt like it looked like a pretty cut and dry self-defense deal. And the way they are persecuting him and the way they hate him, and if you watch social media, the way the left hates this kid is the way they hate us all. And this kid, if you can't see, if you are so blinded by your hate that you can't see that this kid has a pure heart, he's out doing community service and removing graffiti and has a packed CPR medical kit to help people, and just the way he portrays himself and the way he testified, oh my gosh, this kid is like my dream kid. But yet you still see the hate. You still see the hate coming from the left. They are vicious.
You know, it's interesting. We talked about black supremacy and privilege in ways that, you know, Black Lives Matter wants to, you know, abuse. And there's a victimization out there. And I'm wondering, you know, with the whole demonization of white people and calling black conservatives, you know, the black face of white supremacy and all those other kind of things. Kyle represents a bunch of different things. He's male. He's white. I'm guessing Christian. I don't know for sure. He's a gun owner. He's defending himself. He's using the Second Amendment. You know, he's openly carrying a firearm. You know, he's not a criminal. You know, he represents all these different groups. I want to mention also Chappie's on the line, Donnie Chapman. He comes up at the bottom of the hour, but he called in earlier, so I'm going to bring him into the conversation too. He's also does shooting competitions, and Shirley and Donnie, you know, got to chat a little bit last week. But what do you think, Diana, getting back to the question, what is it that he represents? Because this isn't a trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, and it's clearly a case of self-defense. We've got the video. It's cut and dried. The FBI, tried to hide the evidence, which is a good thing the journalist, shared it with the defense. But how many people or how many groups do you think he represents, and is that really what's on trial here as far as the left goes, to try and suppress all our rights, individual action, guns, all those kind of things I talked about? What do you think?
Well, I think that it boils down to him representing good, and in the final days that good will be called evil. You can just chalk up, and I'm a spiritual, I'm a Christian. I believe that what the Bible says is true, and I believe that this is bigger than just a Republican and a Democrat, a liberal and a conservative issue. I think that this is a global issue. I think that you're seeing things play out. In my mind, I can see things play out that I've read about, and that this is just boiled down to being good and evil.
Yeah, that's a really good way to look at it, and I appreciate that comment, because, I see this as a deep state versus individuals, and this is how I tend to look at things. Globalists, yes, I mean, that's what the deep state's involved with, but they really want to create a situation where they run everything, and we are completely powerless. You know, it'd be interesting to imagine if this were a young black teenage woman who had an AR-15 and had to defend herself against three attackers, especially if those attackers were white, as they were in the case of Kyle Rittenhouse. I mean, this isn't an interracial event at all, and yet he's being portrayed as a white supremacist. Would the state have the same – well, obviously they wouldn't, but it'd be a completely different argument if that were the case. What do you think?
Yes, I concur. That is a really unique point, that it isn't interracial. And you see Chicago every day. You have black-on-black crime and murder every day. And they just do not care. It's just that they go after a certain narrative, and a certain narrative, or even George Floyd. I've never really understood why they chose George Floyd to be their deity for, he wasn't necessarily a grand person to be putting on that idol stand,
No, he's a criminal who died of fentanyl. But
yes,
he was on video.
Yes.
He was on video.
But it didn't
That's
matter.
The difference.
It didn't matter. I mean, they took this is where the deep state is so powerful that it does not matter who you are, what you have done. They can either make you a god or they can make you the devil. And it doesn't matter what the facts are, but that's where the scary part lies, the power of the narrative.
We're going to go through it here at Action Radio. I guarantee you, when the deep state realizes that we're affecting the national debate, when we have enough listeners and enough sponsors and enough action that we're taking, we're sponsoring bills that put full product liability back on vaccine manufacturers, and we're ending the withholding tax during the time you're earning your standard deduction, all the things we have planned here to introduce people to new ideas of freedom they have no concept of yet, we are going to go through hell. I'll tell you that right now. Everybody associated with the show, we're going to go through hell. And that's the price you pay for freedom, and I'm ready. I've already made that commitment. I want to bring Donnie in the conversation here. Donnie Chapman, known as Chappie Tactical and Firearms, competition shooter. I don't know if, Johnny, are you the same shoot? Are you this epic shoot here in Savannah, Georgia, or are you someplace else?
It's not actually a shoot. It's like a presentation demonstration for influencers. And we're just here as a vendor. They're just actually trying different firearms. We're not competing or anything like that.
Oh, I thought you were. Okay, my mistake.
Wearing our teal shirt.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the teal, the t-shirts. Yeah, those are kind of cool. Let's get back to Donnie, though, because I want to bring him in the conversation, because, and all you folks are welcome to stay for the rest of the show till the top of the hour, as far as I'm concerned. And this is kind of cool. It's like becoming, Friday Gun Day. Donnie, what do you think so far?
About Kyle?
Yeah, any of what we talked about so far?
I think he's a patriot. I mean, he's wanting to go out there, like she said, work for his community. I saw the prosecution was trying
to define what community was just because he doesn't live there. I mean, he's wanting to take care of America and everybody who works hard to have a business. So, yeah, I think he's a shining example of whatever young, you know, adolescent should be or aim towards. Like I said, he wanted to help the community. He's doing things to better himself by going to the junior police academy, the junior fire academy. So, and, you know, volunteered his own time to be out there.
Are they keeping him in the academy, or are they
and I'm sure everything's on hold right now because of background checks with the whole, with the trial and everything else. So,
if he's,
I'm sure they'll re-invite him back.
If he's found not guilty, as he should be, is there going to be pressure on the academy to not, I mean, he'd be the perfect police officer. I mean, this guy's like SWAT team. I mean, he's already been through a major, you know, life conflict. You know, so he,
well,
to me, he'd
I know
be,
Florida's
you know.
Hiring a lot of law enforcement, so I'm sure there's an opening that they'll be more than happy to take him down here.
Interesting.
So,
yeah. Of course, there's going to be the movie, you know, I think, who's the guy that
there'll
used to play Hercules, you know, the actor, or maybe John Voight will do something. Hopefully we get a good conservative filmmaker to make a decent video of this. All right. We've got a few minutes. I don't know, Diana, I don't know if you guys are limited, Diana and Shirley, so make sure we get more stuff here. Diana, you said something. Your slogan kind of bugs me a bit. You know, education, not legislation. Being a citizen legislator, you have to know that. I'm like, what? What are you talking about?
Well, that point is that anti-gun people always want to throw another law at the lawful gun owners to you know, fix a problem, what they see as a problem. And in safety doesn't come from legislation. Safety comes in our communities, being able to defend yourself, being able to know how to do things like that. That is how you are truly safe. Legislation
right.
is only going to give you some sort of that you can be safe or that you should be safe. But it gives you nothing. It gives you nothing. It's a piece of paper that obviously criminals do not care about. But back before I do have to leave, and before I leave, I would like to talk about Kyle Rittenhouse one last time. Tulsi
sure.
Gabbard, who has been very outspoken, she's a Democrat. She is a very outspoken against what the Democrats have done to her as a DNC, as a candidate. And then she chimed in on the Kyle Rittenhouse case yesterday. Or the day before, and she said something about she was lambasting the media for saying that he was a mass murderer, for basically coming out against this kid, which lent her to, you know, basically supporting self-defense, which is amazing because she's not very strong in the Second Amendment. So I was happy to see her coming out in support of, you know, the evidence and being able to defend yourself. But she mm-hmm. also said something else. She said, he's obviously a foolish boy who felt like he had to go out and protect people because other people weren't doing it. And I was like, what are you talking about, a foolish boy? I wish there were more foolish Americans there in Kenosha, Wisconsin, that had been standing right beside him and squashing all of the, you know, hate and discord and the mayhem and the burning. I mean, it just totally floored me that people would that, and that was a good liberal talking about this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So they really do have a disdain for the average American citizen to be able to defend themselves and stand up for their community. And it's a shame.
Yeah. I always hate that expression, you know, you can't take the law into your own hands. Well, we do that every day, you know, by our actions, by obeying them, by electing people, by doing all kinds of different things that we do. And in the case of citizen legislation, actually writing the laws that we consent to be governed by. So it's a disempowerment. It's a, you know, do what you're told, get along, you know, join the group, you know, be part of the matrix and shut the hell up. And it just bothers the hell out of me. So I'll save my chat with some of the laws we did. And Shirley, did you get a chance to pass those on to Diana? I think I sent you like five of our gun
did.
Bills.
Yeah, I did, but
we don't talk about now, but I mean, sometime, you know, because I'd love to have you guys, if you're interested in being lobbyists, you know, in Washington. I know you're not crazy about legislation, but maybe I can sway you over a little bit. Go ahead, Shirley. What do you think?
No, we can definitely talk about that. We just didn't have time. We've been kind of a little busy here, but I am going to have to go. I have to go work for the D.C. Project, promoting our Second Amendment and securing it.
Okay.
And it's been awesome being back on your show, Greg. And
well, thank
hopefully
you.
I'll be on in another month, maybe, if you want me back.
Well, I might find more time for you. Oh. I might get you on every Friday. I've been our schedule rearranged a little bit because what's that?
Thanks for having us on.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you guys later. But yeah, we have tons of things that we need to go over. Diana, Shirley, yeah, Shirley, we'll talk about getting you on more often. I got plans for you.
Okay,
it's gonna be fun. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye bye.
All right, guys, take care. All right. Yeah, I want to find out the things that they're promoting and the gun technology, some of the new things coming out. Yeah, this is what happens at Action Radio is that, and Chappie knows, he filled in for Jim one day and he got his own report like immediately. I'm probably going to do the same thing with Shirley, see if she wants to come on. Chappie, do you think 3 gun reports is too much for one day?
Nope. Freedom Friday.
Okay. There you go. That's what's becoming. I'll get Jane's opinion too. Yeah. Do you know anything about this show and what some of the products and things that they're displaying and why it's going on?
No, I came into the tail end of that, so I didn't hear.
Oh, okay. All right, you're not familiar. So what are you doing? You're at a shooting competition this week? What's happening?
Yeah, so yesterday we shot, and I was one of the sponsors at the Partner Force match. It's the second year they had it to honor the fallen operators. It was held at a Element training complex in Holt, Florida. It was a USPSA style and scoring, but with rifles or with PCC. So you shot major scoring if you shot a 5.56, 53 or 308 caliber. If you shot a 9mm like pistol caliber carbine, you shot minor scoring. So they just kind of did like USPSA scoring, but over
308 and a pistol, you're saying? Is it a 308 pistol? No, I didn't think so.
No, 308 rifle.
Yeah, that'd be better.
Pistol caliber carbine, 9mm.
Oh, okay.
So it was more of a rifle event with USPSA type scoring. So. But they had over 125 competitors yesterday. One of the side matches raised $8,000 for the family on top of everything else that was donated. They flew in the flag. For the family, it was a great event.
Wow.
For everybody. So a lot of veterans out there for Veterans Day shooting, and they'll be doing it again next year. They had a lot of great spots. Black Rifle Coffee was one of the major tier one sponsors. So
I want to talk to them.
Great coffee.
I'm on their mailing list now, so I get their products. So I definitely want to chat with them at some point. This is one of those major companies, and I want to get a major gun manufacturer involved in what we do here too. So we'll get some of those national. Sponsors and maybe some sponsors of the shooting events too. Who knows? But I think especially if we center this around Friday, and these folks want to come on and listen to what we do. And again, it was interesting talking to Diana because I sent 5 of our bills, of our program bills, to Shirley. Hopefully, I'd love to get those folks involved. But it's interesting. People don't think that they can write, advocate, you know, bills, laws. It's like it's the lawyer thing gets in the way. The idea that, well, I'm not qualified to do this because I'm just a regular person. And I'm thinking, no, that's exactly why you're qualified to do it, because you're a regular person. You know, I mean, all it takes is common sense and, at least a high school education should pretty much do it as far as that, but mostly it's common sense.
Yeah, so in the Air Force, we're always mm-hmm. taught, you know, if you're going to complain or find a flaw in something, have a solution as well. So, you know, we may not like these laws, but we find flaws in these laws. But also, like you said, let's help write legislation
mm-hmm.
to make it easier for our politicians to present it. You know, we've already done the back work. We've presented what's right and what's wrong. And so
mm-hmm.
that we can get what we want versus letting the politicians write the stuff that doesn't make any
sense.
Well,
they don't, though. That's the thing. You know who writes gun laws is Bloomberg. You know, when Dan and Shirley were talking about the moms, you know, against whatever it is, I've forgotten the exact name of the group that Bloomberg's sponsoring. I mean, there's money behind them. And I'm wondering where the conservative billionaires are. Where are the patriot billionaires? You know, unless they're just making money and helping their workforce and, you know, building factories, whatever they're doing. But we need an equivalent of like a George Soros, you know, promoting patriotism as opposed to Marxism. Anybody come in line?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Well,
go ahead.
I think companies start out that way that are pro 2A, and then what happens? A lot of their investors kind of, you know, pull the strings as a puppet, you know, more or less is what happens. And so, just like with banks, you know, they don't want to back gun businesses. So I think that's half the issues. A lot of these businesses start out voicing their pro 2A action once they become big, get board of directors or bigger investors, and they kind of pull back because they're afraid of losing those investors. So, or it's just like, you know, some actors who are pro 2A because they don't want to be shunned in their community, more or less, you know, they kind of just remain quiet, but yet it's okay to voice your liberal opinion these days. So,
so we need to make conservative opinions, or I wouldn't even say conservative opinions. We need to make patriotic opinions, individual rights opinions, popular, you know, by expressing them. You know, it's like the more you express, the better off it is. But I think there was One American News has had something on, I think, this morning and last night. They started a report about BlackRock investments. And apparently they are investing huge amounts of money in corporations and then trying to influence them in terms of, you know, their corporate culture, their HR departments, their wokeness, their diversity, and all this other crap, everything except to do with the businesses. But what they're not doing is doing that with China. I mean, they're happily investing in communist Chinese companies, you know, basically run by the government on one side. But on the other side, they're coming here trying to tell us to be, you know, woke and all this other crap. And it's ruining our businesses. And, you know, you got businesses promoting things they should never be promoting. You know, it's like, why are the airlines doing all these mandates and why are the hospitals doing all these, you know, vaccine mandates and things like that? It's like, what is there money behind it? Are they being paid off? You know, I'm curious, you know, where they're, is it money buying politics? You know, because they don't need to do this. They need to do it with their products. You know, if you're Black Rifle Coffee Company, you want to make coffee. You know, if you're Ruger Gun Company, you want to make guns. You don't have to deal with a bunch of, you know, some investors coming in your company and telling you how to run it. So they need to start standing up.
Which, exactly. But I think they're so afraid of losing that investment because, again, it's so hard to get backing and funding for gun businesses. I mean, I've run into that issue several times in the past couple of years running my business, you know, coming up, you know, SBA loans and everything else, and being told, hey, it's a great business plan, that these banks or whatever banks I talk to are like, yeah, we love it. We love your business plan, but we're not going to back a gun company just because of everything going on. So then you're stuck to either doing it yourself, or you do have to find those patriotic investors, which hopefully won't control the strings too much of your business. So
yeah.
I think some of these big companies get really big investors that really, I think they invest more for money versus what's right, you know, and standing up for a product or standing up for a right. And then they just start
getting greedy. With all gun sales in this country, how can they miss? Investing in a gun company is like a no-brainer right now.
That's what I told the banks. Yeah, I go, okay, so you'll go ahead and invest in this other company versus something that you know you're going to get paid back on. But they're just afraid to have that stigma, you know, that, oh, we supported a gun company. So, which is bad, you know. Not everybody's getting a right to, you know, run a business, you know, and use the right as American and try to succeed. But they'll back, you know, a liberal company that voices their opinions every day on social media, that it's either their way or the wrong way to them. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
There's such a psychology to guns, too, and this is why I find it so fascinating. This is why I love, you know, we talk about competitions. Actually, one of the bills I sent to Shirley to pass on to Diana, the Gun Owner Civil Rights Protection Bill of 2020. So I wrote a bill back last year about making gun owners a protected class under the Civil Rights Act. So the Civil Rights Commission would actually have to enforce discrimination against gun owners. So that was fascinating. So these are some of the brainy things that are coming out of, you know, the ideas of the folks here at Action Radio. Competition, new holsters, new tech. What are some of the fun things? We don't talk enough about the actual guns themselves.
Yeah, well, actually, first weekend, which we'll get into the guns. So tomorrow at Scambia River Gun Club, we'll have our monthly steel challenge match.
Yay.
There's still some slots, so if you want to go to practicescore.com and just type up the Scambia River Gun Club, Steel Challenge will show up, and you can sign up for it. Again, it's the second Saturday every month, and that's the best way to start into competition shooting. Steel Challenge is like a subdivision of USPSA. And like I said, they put on a great match at Scambia River Gun Club in Cantonment, and actually we are – starting to go under development, and within the next year and a half to 2 years, we will have a super complex there. We will have additional six more competition bays that will have 25-foot berms. We're pushing a step-tier 600-yard range, so it'll kind of slope down. There'll be 100. There'll be targets at 100, 200, and so on out. And then we're
only six. Come on,
we
need
1,000
yards. We need 1,000 yards, right, dude. 1,000 with a big gun.
Well, I can try talking. We'll try talking them into it. But we are getting like, which is, this is a big thing in, amongst the competition world. We've been to a lot of ranges. Some of the best ranges ever we've seen. Porta potties are terrible. So we took those ideas, everything we see. We're building actual indoor plumbing bathrooms at the competition base. Right now, even at they have indoor plumbing. So we have actually nice bathrooms there, air conditioning, everything. But we're building some that will be up at the competition range. And then we're also going to have four bathrooms within our clubhouse that we're going to build, because with that clubhouse, we can have classes and all that other stuff. So we figured, hey, have classes. You don't want just two bathrooms and you have a whole class full of people you're teaching. Let's have a big, you know, four bathrooms. I'm going to try and talk them into, you can get some showers there. So,
why don't you just put it in a bed and breakfast while you're at it?
Then,
it is a gun range.
Well, we're actually going to probably have at some of our matches actually some local vendors to help support the community with their food trucks too. So,
oh, food trucks are perfect.
Everybody
gets
hungry while
they
eat, you know.
Yeah, this, you know, it's funny you should say that, because that's when I used to do the 1,000-yard competitions, which I absolutely loved. Boy, you were so hungry by the end of it, because you hadn't eaten for like, you know, 5-6 hours, you know, and of course, intense competition. It was a really interesting challenge. There was a range out in California near Folsom, so it was out by Diablo something or the nuclear plant. And so it was way out there. It was quite a drive. But they had a series, like they marked off every 100 yards out to 1,000. And they had, it was a pit. So you actually had, you know, you spent half your time in the pit, you know, scoring for somebody else. So you had the target drop down, you'd mark it and would raise up again so people could see how they were shooting. And they had this one event where you'd start at about 500 yards and you didn't know the range. So all these people that the really good, you know, they had professional, you know, police snipers, military snipers, and, you know, amateurs like me. So it was my little shepherd scope with the range finding. But it was kind of funny, because one of the most interesting events was where they get you between 100 yards. So you didn't exactly know where you were. You didn't know the range. You just had to drop down and shoot. And it was fascinating to try and guess, you know, where you were. Because, of course, the MilDoc guys, if you look through military scopes, people just aren't as informed on some of the more technical parts of this, and I try and explain these. They have a series of dots on the vertical and the horizontal axis of the crosshairs, and those are angles, those are radians, and you try and, you know, you can use formulas to get your range, and you make several clicks on your scope, and it takes time to adjust it. When you got an event like this, you don't have that kind of time. So you just kind of have to wing it. You know, if the wind's from the left and, you know, it's a hot day, you know, you might want to, so you kind of have to guess, you know, aim a bit to the left and then, you know, guess, you know, how much you're going to lower. You don't have time to dial in all your numbers and things. I found that the most interesting, but it was very instinctive shooting, usually like 500 yards or less. But all these little variations can be put in too.
Oh, yeah,
I want to do the long range.
All goes back to, you know, training. Rely on your training. You know, you go out there and train for the event. Develop a dope card for your scope, data on previous engagement. That way, you know where your MilDoc pay, if you're shooting at, if you're zeroed at 100 and you know you're shooting at a target at 500, like you say, you don't have time to dial in your scope. You know you go so many MilDocs up and hold over that way.
Yeah, there's so much technical stuff. It's kind of fun, but I definitely want to do the steel targets. And what I need to do with you probably right after New Year's, when I'll have more time and ability to do this, we need to do a series of videos out at the Escambia River Gun Club. We should interview the people, put it on video, you know, get people out of it, because I want to start doing a lot of work with this club. I mean, it sounds like a great place to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the reason is I want to compete. I want to get back into it myself,
like
you know, because it's fun.
Yeah, like I said, we're putting a lot of change into the club. We're going to really expand it. And then starting in February, the first Saturday of the month, we will be starting USPSA, which I'll be in charge of running it. So it'll be the first Saturday every month starting February. So we'll have every weekend you can pretty much shoot 1 to 2 events at Escambia River Gun Club. So.
Wow. So it's in Cantoma. For those folks that don't know, and I don't know exactly, well, tell me whereabouts is the range, because we're here, you know, I'm in Milton. It's sort of like between Milton and Pensacola, north of us, like northwest, I'm guessing. Okay.
So it's off Rocky Branch Road, which is actually off, if you're, let's say you're coming from Milton, you go down 90 heading west, then you take a right on Chemukla, just fall that down, and then it comes to the stop light where it becomes, it's called Four Corners. And then that turns into a, you can either turn right up Chemukla or just go straight. Just keep going straight until you hit Rocky Branch Road, take a right, and it'll take you straight to the range.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting.
But it's not too far.
Some of,
you know, it's in a great area between Pensacola, Milton, the bar.
And it's wide open. There's space out there so you can expand and do more stuff.
Exactly. So we just acquired another 40 acres out there, and that's where we're developing a lot more of these competition bays. And, it's going to be a great complex out there. I mean, it's already great already, but in the fact that it is a private range and for what we cost for an annual membership is the best round. Some ranges, you know, they make you pay an annual fee, and then you, on top of that, you're paying an additional fee to go out there and shoot. Not at Escambia. You pay your one-time annual fee, and then that includes a free membership for your spouse and your kids under 18. So you can take the whole family out there and shoot, and then you can bring a guest as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'll bring Jean when she comes down. Jean, you want to go shooting? I'll have her unmute.
Yeah, that sounds like that sounds like a good idea.
Okay. Yeah, I like Jean's.
Yeah.
Like, go ahead.
Yeah.
Jean, do you have a question for Donnie?
No, not at all.
Okay.
And then the other thing, too, we can train because since tomorrow is the Steel Challenge match, they already set up all the Steel Challenge stages. So you can go out there. It's almost kind of like walking the golf course, you know, the day prior.
Oh, okay.
So you can go out, you can kind of go out there and practice on the stages, you know, to kind of get your, figure which way you're going to shoot the targets each stage. So like I said, it's kind of like golfers going out there walking the course the day before.
Well, I want to start over. I want to make sure, you know, I'll do a little safety check lesson and just make sure I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to, because it's been a while since I have been out, certainly since I've competed. So I'll probably just do some basic range stuff and work my way up. But Steel Challenge, it's fun. It's really fun to shoot things and have them fall down. I'm sorry. It's fun.
Yep.
It's a great time.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's I'm glad you mentioned that, because we, us at Escambia River Practical Shooters, who will be hosting the USPSA matches at Escambia River Gun Club, we are here in the near future, we are going to host a couple introduction to competition shooting class courses. Just basically, you know, first thing first, go over safety, and then we're going to go over, you know, range commands, what to expect when and when you don't handle your firearm without the presence of a, or under the direction of a range officer. Just that way, so people aren't going into it blind for their first match. They're already going to be overwhelmed. They're already going to be stressed as it is. But if they can kind of go in there a little bit prepared, I think they'll enjoy it a lot more. And then, of course, that will bring other people to shoot. And, and like I said, they just will understand, okay, this is what this range command means. This is, you know, this, this, and this. And then we're going to give kind of like a demonstration, and everybody will kind of do a walkthrough demonstration of going up to the line, make ready, unload, show clear, so that it's not foreign to them the very first time they compete.
And even if you have done it, like I say, I competed and shot for over 20 years. I still want to start back and make sure the basics are there. And so there's never feel that you know something, you think you know something, you know, assume that you know something. There's no problem going back and just getting basic courses. As a flight instructor, I knew that too. People would come back and, well, I've done this for years. Well, how long, when was the last time you flew? You know, 8 months ago. Okay, well, and how about before that? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, well, you're not current. You know, you think you are. You got the ratings.
You can learn something every day.
You're not there.
Nobody knows.
Exactly.
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Okay. And that's the fun of it, too. This is what, and actually, any of these things, flying, shooting, sailing, any kind of art form in motion or you know, something that has potential for some really horrible things happening. And that's kind of the challenge and the beauty of it all is you're mastering something that is, you know, quite intense, you know, firing a gun, you know, flying a plane, racing. I want to take a racing car course. You know, I want to get back into fencing, you know, and maybe competition for us in the senior division. You know, these things make life fun. And, you know, if you're limiting your gun to simply self-defense, that should, I mean, self-defense, you know, it's an absolute priority, but it's kind of like a negative. You know, it's like the worst possible thing that can happen to you is to have to use your gun in self-defense. So, and if that's the only thing your gun is for, then I think you're missing an entire world of fun, of camaraderie, of family activity, of challenge, of personal accomplishment, of just, you know, stress and conditioning and exercise. And there's just so many things that are involved in competition. This is why I love doing it. And I'm not the best, far from it. You know, I'm like middle range shooter, you know, but I don't care, but I love it. You know, and my only competition is against me. And, you know, can I be?
Yeah,
there?
You're
so,
only competing against yourself. But
I'm competing against myself.
Yeah, it's a great camaraderie. You meet
people
of all, you know, everywhere, and it's a great networking organization as well too. So, but if I can get back to a steel challenge, also next week there is a level 2 steel challenge match called the Florida Panhandle All 8 Steel Challenge Championship. It's being held at Element Training Compound in Holt, and that's from November 19th to the 21st. This is going to be your higher-level shooters. We're going to have Grandmaster Gatlin Johnson will be one of the shooters. Jeff Johnson, a lot of the bigger names in the Steel Challenge shooting community will be at this match. And that's just a great way to see some under 2 second stages being shot. So if you want to come out and watch, that'd be great. And then that might motivate you to give it a try too. And like I said, you can shoot 22 up to 9 mil. So it'll be a great time. And like I said, it'll be 3 days, and it's all 8 of the steel challenge stages will be shot on. So,
you know, it's interesting. We get in the wintertime, a whole bunch of tourists come to Florida and a bunch come to this area. And so, you know, as you broadcast your website and Facebook page and information, it'd be interesting to see if we can get some of the folks, especially from the liberal states, you know, who may not have the ranges or may not have the access to them because they're in Wisconsin and it's freezing, you know, or Minnesota or Michigan, you know, and although Michigan has a lot of deer hunters. So that's a different kind of thing. But as far as people that have never tried it before, one of the big things in San Francisco that fascinated me when I was a tour guide out there are the Japanese tourists who came in. And the first question they asked me after their duck tour or cable car or city tour is, can I go to a gun range? I want to fire a gun. I've never done that. And so a lot of times we take for granted. And of course, it was big. We had a lot of Japanese tourists. We had a lot of different tourists from all over the place. But a lot of people would come specifically to the gun ranges, and Jackson Arms was one of the ones out there that specialized in tourists, and they would introduce them to guns. So they get a chance to fire them. They loved it. Of course, the really enthusiastic ones would go to Vegas and do the fully auto kind of thing. Do we have anything like that out here for folks that are either from, you know, they're in the area visiting, or especially if we get foreign tourists, which I think we're going to get more and more of as Florida gets crowded. Yeah.
Helped the Europeans that have come here through a buddy that lives in Europe that has some friends coming through here, that because a lot of Europeans want to shoot because, you know, they're here in America, they want to do the American thing, and then, you know, we do have the Second Amendment where in Europe they make it difficult to own a firearm due to all the taxes,
right.
So it's more amongst the elite. So yeah, I've done it through Chaffee Tactical, taking out people from Europe to go shooting. So we do have something kind of like that, a little tourist thing if they get a hold of me. And, of course, first things first, go over safety. But, you know, we try to take out different variations of guns because some of them do want to shoot revolvers just because, you know, the American West, you know, they kind of want to have that experience. And then, of course, a lot of them do want to experience the military-style weapons as well.
See, I want to do them all. I want to do a single-action revolver draw and shoot, and you know, I want to try full auto, and there's a couple things if you're into the spectrum I have yet to do. Okay, we don't have a lot of time left, so I'll make sure we cover everything you want to cover. And again, I always ask questions, you know, just say, look, here's what, you know, I want to tell you about this, and it's like, okay, that's my cue to, like, you know, stop asking as many questions. So feel free to make sure you get the information out you want. It's not a problem with me. I'm like a big kid, so I get really enthusiastic.
Absolutely. And then the next thing coming up here at Escambia River is on the 27th and the 5th of December. So 27th of November, 5th of December, which has absolutely taken off, is the 22 Rimfire Bench Rest. That's the American Rifle Association sanctioned match. This match has taken off. You know, everybody thinks, oh, I'm shooting a 22, but you're shooting a 22 at 50 yards at a target that's the size of a quarter. And it's not just hitting that quarter, it's trying to get a bullseye. So, again, it really tests your skill. It tests your reading the wind, your trigger discipline. And these matches fill up within 5 minutes. So
really,
so let's
put that in perspective.
So this is really
for people
taking on
a quarter, you know, because we have new listeners, and Azerbaijan is our latest country that's joining us. And so we're talking about them earlier this morning. And so when we talk about the gun stuff, this is why, you know, I love doing this on Friday, because I want to encourage people to come to the United States and try it out and see if we, you know, as we expand the show into other countries, I want to see if we can introduce gun laws into their countries, because I think it might be one of the best ways to introduce people to citizen legislation, because that's the one thing they don't have, and it's a tangible, easily grasped concept, as opposed to some of the more, you know, esoteric rights that we talk about. This is one you can see. You know, owning a gun is something very tangible, because it's a right you exercise with a physical object, as opposed to a free speech, which is more a mental kind of thing. And so this might be something very interesting.
I'm glad you mentioned that as well, too, because, you know,
okay,
I'm on a lot of Zoom meetings with a lot of European and Eastern European ammunition factories and firearm factories over there. And it's interesting to see the shift, especially in Eastern Bloc Europe, especially the former Soviet Union, where everybody there is pro-gun. Everybody has a firearm now.
They do.
And you talk to a lot of them, they said the reason why, because they wish they would have had firearms prior to, you know, Stalin coming in and turning everything into communism, because they said if they would have had the right to have firearms back then, they would have prevented all that stuff. So they're kind of seeing what we saw back in the day, but they're actually promoting it. And so, like, say, even in their competition shooters, you know, they're treated as like Olympic athletes, professional athletes. They get paid a lot more than our professional shooters.
Like biathlon, you're talking about, just shooting competitions?
IPSC, yep. Especially in Russia, they have I believe she's like 24. She's number one in the world at IPSC, and they treat her like a national symbol.
Interesting.
Yeah, whereas here, you know, it's like, okay, hey, yeah, there's a competition shooting, but their countries invest a lot of time and money into those shooters.
Well,
that
military,
they want to represent the best.
Yeah,
yep.
So it's hard to afford, you know, Olympic swimming pools, you know, all over your country, or some of the more expensive sports or sports teams. I mean, we have the NBA, but how many countries have an NBA, for example, you know, for their basketball team? And so although basketball itself is not inherently that expensive, but the facilities, you know, or ski jumping. How many people have an Olympic ski jump, you know, to practice on? Jamaica doesn't, you know. So, you know, it's interesting. Now, we have Skype now. Our Skype line works just fine. We have Alan Dawson joins us from Belize, and he's going to be moving to 6 o'clock in the morning. So if you want to have some fun, call in. You know, you can call in a couple times, you know, a day. I don't care. You know, we have, like, Pianki calls in like 3 or 4 times a show sometimes, depending on what he's interested in. And we're so open here. We don't have rules. The first rule is we don't have rules. And so any of those folks from Europe, especially Europe, Russia, Russia's our fourth biggest destination outside the United States in terms of listeners. So it's Canada, England, Australia, and Russia, which is interesting.
Even better.
And so feel free to
– next week
– yeah. Uh-huh.
I will
give them our Skype number.
To do kind of – a little live event next week when I call in, because I will be at the range early Friday, because next Friday will be the staff shoot for the Florida All-8 Steel Challenge. So we're shooting later that afternoon, but I can kind of walk around and just do some interviews with some people out there, and even walk around and talk about the stages. You know, hey, here's what the stage, and here's how you
just bring a phone,
stuff like that.
We had that Trump rally. We had a couple of people at Trump rallies called in while they were waiting. It was like 6 hours ahead of time, right? And so we were getting, you know, a person on the street reports, you know, actually Josie did it. And so Josie was walking around talking to Trump supporters, and she's got this really thick accent. She's wonderful. She's from Nicaragua. It does our Latino report. But Josie's like, yeah, I've got someone here. Wants to talk to you. It's like, okay, great, put him on. We just walking up and down the line talking to people. Who wants to go on the radio? It was funny. But, so any of those folks want to do it. But especially, I'll send you it's right on our broadcast page, but I'll just copy it right here real fast and send it to you. I did something I shouldn't have done. All right, don't do that. Let's go back, make sure I don't lose the show. It's only a couple minutes left. It's not as bad as losing at the beginning. I don't know what I did, but I'm not going to do that again. All right, I'll send it to you. So don't do that, Greg. Say whatever you did, don't do that. All right, so now let's see. I wonder if anybody's on live chat. Anybody actually called us this morning on chat? We have a live chat thing here as well. Okay, I fixed it. Well, no, I didn't.
Oh, perfect.
That's okay. I'm not going to worry about it. You know, there we go. I've interrupted you again. So we got a couple minutes left. And so you might want to share this with, you know, especially if there's like an Escambia County board or the local shooters, you know, we want to get involved because there's a lot of local information. And so especially if you're doing, you know, beyond that or just, you know, we need to, I want to do the general stuff that anybody in the country can latch onto and say, hey, that sounds like fun. So how do people find shooting events in their area? What's the best way to do it?
The best way is to go to practicescore.com. And on the top, there's a tab for matches. Just click on matches, and it should update to your local area. But there's also a search bar where you can just type in Escambia. You can type in Pensacola. And all the matches within that local area will pop up. Anything, USPSA, Steel Challenge, Skeet Shoot, Trap Shoot, everything will pop up.
Okay.
So practicescore.com, and go to matches, and then go to search. And any type of competition shooting will pop up.
Well, that sounds good. Any last minutes? We got about a minute left. Anything else we should know about the shooting world? Yeah, just, you know, things, previews of next week. I think you already given that.
If you can, come out to Escambia River Gun Club. Check out the range, and hopefully you'll sign up and join the range and start coming up and shoot not just at the range, but also our competitions.
Yeah. And let's get a Chappie Tactical information. Facebook,
yeah,
website, anything like that?
I can be reached at facebook.com/ChappieTactical or on Instagram at ChappieTactical.
Yeah. And I'll try not copying things at the last minute and screwing up the last 2 minutes of my show.
Oh, don't worry.
Okay. It's just internal. I've ended shows by hitting the wrong button. It's just you know, me. I get worried sometimes, all these crazy things. It's been an amazing week. I mean, it's just so many things have happened this week, especially with the rally, some of the other things. I don't know if I sent you a copy of the rally. I will. That was pretty pretty special Tuesday night. All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And we'll do it again next week. And for everybody that was involved in our show this week, thank you. We did some amazing things. And Chappie, just before you go, yesterday's show, we actually, because you're a veteran, you might be interested, we read a lot of poetry written during combat. You know, some ancient poetry, a lot of World War One. We covered Revolutionary War, Civil War, and all the way up through the Hurt Locker. You know, that's where we ended our discussion of the poetry of war. It's very quite a serious show. Something very interesting. You might be interested in that, and fellow veterans might be as well. Anyway, just to let you know that. And on that note, we're going to have a whole bunch of stuff next week, and it should be a fascinating. Every week changes at Action Radio as we progress further in citizen legislation as we try to write the laws that we consent to be governed by. Greg Pangloss for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, and our website for our laws is writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS. And we'll be back Monday morning, 6 o'clock Central, 7 Eastern, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, and let's do it then.
Have a great